And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Good morning, good morning, good morning, good morning. Welcome to Declare Your Independence with me. Hello. What we're going to do today, let me go ahead and tell you what's going on. Get my glasses on so I can read. Aaron Voicing, Bread Wallet. Standalone Bitcoin Wallet. That's what we're going to be working on. You know, the standalone Bitcoin wallet is something that we need to... let's get the sound right here. What's up? One, two, three. Okay, maybe a little better. What we're going to do is standalone Bitcoin wallet. One thing I found that was very interesting about this particular wallet is that it goes directly to the blockchain. It doesn't have, like, into a another server that clears stuff, that does stuff. It's all on your phone. It goes straight to the blockchain, which is what I thought some of them did anyway. So that was, you know, an interesting revelation for me. I want to go ahead and check that out. So we're going to go ahead and talk to Aaron Voicing, breadwallet.com, and learn something. You know, I'm looking forward to that. Then David Einstein, you know, Monsta Pack, a public safety oriented super PAC. This is Eileen Proctor is a public relations firm individual. She gets us a lot of good contacts when we need out of Beverly Hills. And she contacts us sometimes, things that she thinks would be of interest, or she's looking to book someone. So I go, yes, whatever Eileen, do it, whatever. Because we get way net benefit out of whoever she gets. And usually we find some really interesting people about that. I go, good. I'd be more than happy to talk to them. So Eileen Proctor suggests we talk to David Einstein, and we'll go ahead and do that very thing, and we will learn more about what he has to say. Now, the PAC, one of the reasons why I'm interested to talk to him is the PAC laws changes, political action committees. It changes all the time. So I wanted to go ahead and get an update on, you know, exactly how that process works. And I'm going, okay, are we using this for activism and you collect the money to do what with it? To, I don't know, give it to a candidate or something? I mean, you know, how do the PACs actually work? You know, everybody's collecting it. Okay, now you collect it. Now what? Why would you even have a PAC? For what reason do you do that? Does it give you... I don't know, a form to be able to advocate or spend something or do an election cycle or be able to get tax write-offs? I don't pay attention to such things. So we're going to go ahead and learn about that. But let's go ahead and get a little bit of background. We're trying to see. Okay, here it is. And I got to explain something to Donna. The way the Skype computer is set up now, the mixer has to be on before you turn on the computer. That's why I put it to sleep and then put it on with this on. Then it recognizes that USB cable. Okay. I explained it before, but now it's on tape. Okay. So anyway, Alma Summer wants to come on and chat. So Alma, we're working on it. We're trying to get... All right, let's see what we can do here. Let me just hit this. Ah, see? Ta-da! I got skills. And if she doesn't answer right away, then we'll get the Aaron Voicing thing on the bread wallet. I wanted to talk about that.
Hello?
Oh, I hear some baby.
Changing a diaper.
Okay, you wanted. All right, here it is. All right. What did you want to talk about, baby?
Okay, we're on, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, waiting on you now.
Waiting on me always, right? Brian has been super slow at work for a little while, and we have decided to do a mini Bitcoin tour. So basically, we're going to be going up to Santa Cruz in a few days, and we're going to be staying there for a couple of weeks with my dad. And I'm hoping to make a few stops on the way, maybe in Southern California with Adam Kokesh. I'm waiting to hear back from him. And then I'm hoping maybe if Davi hasn't come down here already that we can meet up with him. I just sent him a message today.
Said in San Francisco now working on some goodies. We're going back and forth on some artwork and mugs and all that stuff for the summit. But the Santa Cruz, I thought that was New Mexico.
No. Santa Cruz, California is just like 40 minutes south of San Francisco. So it's a long drive, and I haven't seen my dad in many years, and he hasn't met Neo, so he's super excited. And then following that, I'm sorry, hold on, I have some background music. I'm just going to stop real quick. Okay, so following that, then we're going to be coming back to the summit, and we have some family coming into town in March, so we'll be back at the beginning of March. And then I was curious if you found your second speaker yet.
Well, we're working on it. There's a lot of I'm kind of waiting. This is Alma Summer. Alma does the she's one of the activists here. She does Jackalope Freedom Festival, Agora Marketplace. They have their own newsletter, newspaper they put out. She's a local activist and very interested in Bitcoin. Oh yeah, didn't you guys go to the Home and Garden Show or something and had a Bitcoin booth? Was that you or some of the other guys?
No, that was Morpheus. But we've been setting up recently around 8th Avenue and Dobson because it's like a super high street traffic area, and we've been handing out the newsletter there. I got some video recently that I just need to post of it, so I can get that on Freedom's Phoenix for everyone to see. But we've had a really good outreach outcome there. So
well, Davi and Drew are working on the Slim Jim kind of thing, you know, for the summit that we need to start passing out locally to a lot of the different organizations and different meetings I go to and all this other stuff. So we're working on that now. We may have that early next week, give you something to pass out. So we're customizing, you know, I made some changes on the text. But the speaker, what we have is Davi's going to do the features of wallets and, what each one of them mean and everything for the lunch program. The afternoon is just workshop. You know, there's a bunch of volunteers. We're going to need you guys to help with all the merchants and the newbies and everything. So this is a head down plow thing. We get all the philosophy and history and everything in the morning from Tuck's event. Julian Tosh is going to represent a lot of things, and he has a lot of contacts and friends and such in the community and BitPay and so on. So they're going to be, BitPay is going to supply us with some material and maybe, you know, some promotion. And then we have a bunch of other, we're just still working. I got to get this flyer and the merchandise done because we only got a month. So I need to get rock and rolling.
It's creeping up on us like super fast. So I would like to suggest to you that I be your second speaker and talk about our mini Bitcoin tour that we're going to be doing. It's still waiting to be coined, no pun intended, but I've talked to Kat and John Kat mostly yesterday, and she's willing to help promote it on her unconventional tour.
Well, I don't mind you back up a little bit, okay? This whole thing, I'm sure there would be an opportunity for a short something, you can something as an example of something, but the our speakers that I'm doing, I'm holding out on the middle one. We have a lot of people that are interested. I haven't announced because the flavor of it is what's important to me. We have a lot of people that can talk technical, they can talk activist, they can talk a lot of things, but that's not really what the morning program is about. It is a brand new, I have no idea, mom, pop, I don't know nothing about Bitcoin, learnify me. That's what I'm doing. And we'll hold on a little bit. We'll talk about it some more. I want the audience to know this, too. Alma, yeah, she's not shy. We'll be right back with Alma Summer and Neo, new baby, when we come back in just a little bit. Yeah, there's something going on here. What did I do? Last night I did a Fiend Phone thing with Derek Slopey and Blake Anderson. Now. Okay. The plan for the summit is not an activist thing. It's going to get way too... I could just scare the living snot out of these people. Now, I don't mind, you know, having a short presentation, a 15-minute or something, get up and say, and along with a bunch of other, and kind of this is what and why, and passing out whatever you want, and I don't care. But the morning main speaker is at 9:26 on Pi Day, is probably going to be Tuck's event, and if not him, there's... See, Andreas Antonopoulos was still, you know, hasn't, you know, said hell no yet. You know, he agreed to it, and then I just haven't been able to get a hold of him. So I'm not really sure what's going on there. And then there's a lot of other opportunities, a lot of people. It's just I got to be careful about who I select, because I don't want to get in all the... You know, I want to make sure they understand the controversies that are going on and the directions and the people are doing different things in the space, but I don't want to...
The commercial just came back.
I don't want to scare people, you know?
No, I gotcha.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
Rhodes... It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
We don't do anything in secret here. Yeah, I'm going through some of the... There's some ghost sound going from somewhere. You know, Alma Summer is one of the activists, very enthusiastic about Bitcoin, been doing a lot of things in the space, and she's certainly, you know, into it when you name your son Neo, you know what I mean? So, you know, my main thing is that I do not want to... This is all about new people. I have many... New merchants. This is one thing that's missing in the space, is a lot of brick and mortar and where to go and how can I spend it and do it and all that was cool. When you start showing people on directories where you can get gas, I mean, where you can get groceries, where you can get, you know, lattes and massages and horse rides and, you know, where go-kart racing. I mean, when you can start showing people that and they're going, oh, okay, well, that's cool, you know. And the other thing is or I'm really having a lot of luck talking to people, and certainly in the crowds and people I talk to, the ability to move wealth. You know, I can get silver and turn Bitcoin and go over some other country and kind of in silver again. I can do that. I can do that. And it costs how much? Oh, well, crap, that's all you had to say. Well, that's what I'm talking about. Some of the activist traits of it is certainly of interest and should be presented, but that's not going to be the primary function. This is not going to be a freedom summit. It's a Bitcoin summit, and it is there so that people can learn enough to be able to start putting it on their phone and get used to it as it goes. Because what I would really like to do, and some of the people that we're talking to, is that there are different organizations, certainly a lot of tourist organizations here, and they have, you know, travel agencies and that kind of thing. If we can have just them, you know, they come out and they can, you know, do packaging for travel packages here that include whatever, and they got their list of, you know, vendors. And when you go to the resorts, those little Slim Jims that you see all in a rack of all the things to do, you know, we accept Bitcoin at this balloon ride. You feel me? So these
I had Davi send me, I don't know, 500 to 1,000 of those Bitcoin flyers for Leo and I to hand out at businesses over the last year, and I've gotten rid of all of the English ones. I only have Spanish ones left. So we've been, you know, approaching businesses personally for I don't know, over a year now. Every time we went to lunch or had a, you know, because I worked with him, so when we went to lunch, we would approach the restaurants we ate lunch at, whether it was the waiter or waitress, just giving them, you know, information about it so that we could tip them in Bitcoin, things like that. I would love to talk about that, and I don't need an hour to talk about things. And
oh, yeah. Well, you know, I would really say, wow, Alma, this is awesome. I should get a bunch of these flyers to you to pass out, and they'll earn your way in, and you're gone in California.
Sounds good, Ernie. I will totally pass them out.
I'll but you're in California. I need you here.
No. Well, we're going to be back before the summit. We're coming back around March 4th. So, because we have family coming into town to meet Neo.
Okay.
And stuff,
No. Count on you at least get 15 minutes. Don't count on more than that.
I won't. Okay. Not at all. I don't even want to talk more than that. Then I have to, like, fill the time with more stuff to talk about. People can come up to me afterwards. You know, I'd rather them get, like, a more generalization sort of the people that are participating in Bitcoin than just hearing two people anyway. I think that the more information they get from the different types of people that are using it, then the more educated they will be.
It'll be of interest.
I'm also going to be speaking at the Bitcoin conference in Texas, so that's also part of our Bitcoin tour. We'll be taking us to Texas after the Bitcoin summit.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Well, we'll be there also. But you see, my thing, I go to Norco Poco at the end of the month. I have to get all this stuff done before I leave. I'll be taking some stuff down there. But it's local. This is local. And I need to get merchants. This is, you know, the one thing that I think is missing in the space is the understanding of the general concept and why it's so important. And it's just, to a lot of businesses, they don't care about the disruptive ability of replacing the entire dollar system of Bite Me and the things go to crap that they have. These are things that need to be done. They need to have an understanding. The problem in the space, whenever I go to any of these Bitcoin conferences, and I'm sure Texas is going to be exactly the same. Yeah. It is going to be the smartest guys in the room going against the other smartest guys in the other room and see who's the smartest. And it's just, and then people that out in the, you know, brick and mortar space are going, what? You know, I have to, what? Well, you were talking about what? I mean, so yes. This is something much more basic and why we did a podcast last. I didn't even record it, you know, because we were working out some audio issues and it looked like I still got. But the we didn't even record it. We were doing finding the best way on FiendPhone and which servers and how much in the capacity. And we're just doing some testing. Well, it was Blake Anderson. You know, it's well known in the Bitcoin community and Derek Slopey. And the reason I want to talk to Blake, but he can't do live during the show because he does homeschooling. So I'm going, okay, well, we can do it in the evening, and I'm going to have Derek come on to, you know, be my translator and understand what the hell did Blake just say. So it was very interesting, and we just were doing a test, and it wound up, I don't know, a couple hours. And I found out a lot of stuff, and I keep asking a lot of different people the same things, and I get a much better understanding. Derek Slopey had just finished reading Andreas Antonopoulos' book on Bitcoin. Oh, my God. To read a book on Bitcoin, I mean, you really got to be dedicated. So we're getting a much better understanding of how this is going to change the planet. But I got to, it keeps getting a higher and higher and higher level of discussions as I've been doing this for years. And I'm telling you, this stuff is just way over some, you know, 53-year-old guy that comes in with the horseback riding stables that was interested in maybe I can get some more money, you know? So we got to be careful in how we present this and how we present what it's going to be about. So I'm really glad Julian Tosh, Tux Event, is there because I had him. I asked him, you know, over the years, had him on a couple of times. I took Corsair. We got in his plane and flew up to Vegas right after CES. Came down, turned right around, and went back the next day with him just because Julian was willing to sit down and show me how to do Bitcoin paper wallets, explain a bunch of different things about Bitcoin to me, about the, you know, a lot of the insides of it, and so I got a lot better understanding. That is why I want him to be part of this history and get from the beginning to the end because he's my age and he understands, you know, how important it is to make that transition for people to understand what the hell it even is. And
well, he'll be able to relate a lot better probably with, you know, your generation.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's
going. Give me those flyers as soon as you can, and I will distribute them to all of the businesses that, you know, Leo and I have connected with over the last year that, you know, we had positive outcomes in speaking about Bitcoin. There's like some bar owners and other restaurant owners and even, you know, waitresses and waiters that accept Bitcoin that we've talked to over the years that we can go and reapproach and tell them about the summit. And I'm sure they would be.
Here we go. And in fact, Morpheus is out at the Home and Garden. That'd be interesting. You know, Morpheus doing anything in the public. I mean, you know, kind of, you know, yeah, right over here. Step right up. Go get you a Bitcoin W. Give me that right there. I'm going to do it. Give me your phone. Go, you know, I can just see that would be. Yeah, he's definitely the pressure guy. So we'll see how that works. But I'm going to go ahead and maybe I should call him and see what's going on. All right. The answer's, you know, semi-yes. I mean, it's always yes. I'm trying to figure out a way that we can incorporate what you're doing with this. So we'll work on it.
Waiting on you, Ernie.
Oh, that's good.
My name is Jacob.
All right. So that's what we'll do. Okay. And so plan on 15 minutes of maybe part of the lunch program or something like that. But I need these two speakers. I got it pretty much covered. I don't have to have another speaker. You know, that is not my goal. And the thing
I'm
is...
I'm still hearing that stupid commercial.
I don't know what's causing this. Hold on. Let me try something.
It's a Liberty...
Okay, is that
now
better?
Now it's down. Yeah.
Yeah, I just had to unplug the Skype. Yeah, it's coming in a feed from somewhere, and I can't tell where.
Oh, no, it turned you and it down. I can't hear either.
No, you can't hear me at all?
I can hear you, but it's hard just through the commercials.
Okay.
Especially a commercial with your voice.
No, really. Okay, I'm gonna have to go. I'm going to have to restart this computer because I need it for something else. But we're good. We'll go ahead and I'll get you the stuff. We're printing it up now.
Okay.
All right, baby. Talk to you later.
All right, bye.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Play. That's for damn Skippy. And Alma and all that local activist friends here and so on, they're really good at promoting and hard work and telling a story, and they got a lot of examples and things to do. I just got to be careful. You know, it could easily become an activist thing. It could become an insider Bitcoin thing of what, and I definitely do not want to have that flavor. I don't mind having people in the space that are actually using it and doing things. Yeah, I got echo. Donna's got it up too loud. Man, too many buttons got dialed. Must have been, if I didn't know better, I'd say grandkids were in. The one thing that I want to talk to Aaron voicing about the breadwallet.com, because I think that concept is another little bit I need to understand. Because what are we going to learn? Can you take a Bitcoin wallet or control of your Bitcoin and do it directly to the chain? You know, you're the one that's, you know, communicating with the node. I didn't know that you weren't before. I don't know. I mean, this is, you know, this is new stuff for me. So I'm going, wow, that kind of bypasses, and maybe there's a little bit more security. You have more trustlessness, you know, and you're doing it. And when they say trustless, they don't mean that it doesn't have, you know, you're not accurate or trusting the math. It's that you don't have to trust another person. You don't have to trust a company. You don't have to trust an intermediary. You don't have to trust, you know, a gatekeeper. You don't have to trust someone. It happens on its own with the math. So these are the things that I'm learning, and there's a lot of things I'm finding out that, yeah, really interested me. You know, a lot of things I can't really even talk about. You know, never say this, so the men will come in and blow you away, and we'll work it in somehow. Watch me, because I'm going to do some research. I got to have confirmation of some certain facts, and I'm going, wow, you know, I mean, you know, basic stuff like where it came from, you know, and who did it and at what time and some of the stories around it, you know, kind of the JFK conspiracy of, you know, freedom and stuff. So we're working on that. So I hate keeping this stuff secret because that's not how I am. I got to remember what's secret, you know. But anyway, so we're working on some stories for you that will be of interest, and maybe we'll reveal them at the Bitcoin summit. But I got to really like reveal them right now or tomorrow and do some research because, you know, they go, he's not able to reveal anymore. Know what I mean? So anyway, we're working on that. The Aaron Voicing Bread Wallet. Let's go ahead and talk about this concept real quick because I wanted to go ahead and, you know, learn to find myself. Mobile app developer Aaron Voisin. He's a mobile app developer and entrepreneur. He studied computer science at Purdue and have done several high-profile apps, including a puzzle game that hit the number two most popular app in the App Store and the app for Yammer. Yammer sold to Microsoft for $1 billion. Okay. Did he get any of that? I mean, damn, you know. All right. Very popular app. Well, that's good. That's good to know. Breadwallet.com. The first standalone. Okay. Now, see, I knew I'm getting something somewhere. Oh, Java wants to. No. Okay. We have. Let me turn this down. See, man, too many buttons. The first standalone iOS Bitcoin wallet. Okay. So this is for the iPhone, I guess. Unlike other iOS wallets, Bread Wallet is a real standalone Bitcoin client. There is no server to get hacked or go down, so you can always access your money. Using SPV mode, whatever that is, Bread Wallet connects directly to the Bitcoin network with the fast performance you need on a mobile device. Oh, I'm already interested. The next step in wallet security. Bread Wallet is designed to protect you from malware, browser security holes, even physical theft. With AES hardware encryption, app sandboxing, keychain, and code signatures, Bread Wallet represents a significant security advance over web and desktop wallets and other mobile platforms. Beautiful simplicity. Simplicity is Bread Wallet's core design principle. A simple backup phrase is all you need to restore your wallet on another device if yours is ever lost or broken. Because Bread Wallet is deterministic, your balance and transaction history can be recovered from just your backup phrase. Okay. Well, if it's not going through a server or on something, I'm wondering how you can take that data and put it onto another phone. All right. Well, we're going to find out. But, I mean, this gets the concept of this is what really gets me. As you're doing Bitcoin and you don't have to have a bank or an institution, it's just your interface with the math on a chain of a ledger that's public and who controls what pieces of that with your password kind of in that part of the blockchain is mine and it's worth this much, you know, to do that and bypass all that stuff, one more step of bypassing that you directly get to that. And I'm going, okay, is this a geek thing, you know, or is this just a easier service and how's the user interface? I don't know. We're going to find out. This is the advancement that's coming in, and it's going with the it's going along with the concept of distributed everything. And there's a lot of things that you may not want distributed. I mean, you get more scale ability with things like manufacturing and so on. You can injection molding of plastic parts in a central place of 15 gazillion at a time, and it's a lot cheaper. Or you can have a file, and all these people can just make it themselves on their desktop printer. The more efficient way, of course, is for that particular thing is the fact that you can get it cheap and quick and easy and mass production in a little bubble package for pretty cheap from China that's done in injection molding and you're done. But then you got, transportation and warehousing and storage and sea containers on ocean liners and yada, yada, yada. I mean, it adds to the cost. And it may still be cheaper to do it that way than just 3D print your own. But then you don't get the psychedelic, coloring of it and the one little extra improvement of the thing of you sign your name on it. I mean, it's just so, yes, there's always going to be some more efficient ways of a collectivized in somewhere do something. But what if that's not your goal? Your goal isn't, how much money I can save on getting this one little part. It's how much convenience and money, enormous amounts of money I can save by having the technology and the machine that can do that part and anything else. So this distributed capability, a lot of times, is not as fast or efficient, but it is. Because it's distributed. It's a free market. It's like going, oh, my goodness, in freedom, it was the argument between capitalism and manufacturing processes that we had here in America versus Russia. They had a 5-year plan. But there's no price discovery. There's no, what's of value to people. There's no supply and demand model. When the Soviet Union needed to come up with, you know, something they need to make, they got to go, well, how many Tchaikovsky, you know, vinyl albums are we going to make or something? Well, survey says of the Politburo, we need this many. You know, that's how many you get. You know, and then you'd be short of something else, and that'd go up in price. And oh my goodness, you bring jeans with, you know, into your luggage into Russia, and you could fund your whole trip with a suitcase full of jeans, but or Marlboros or something. But I'm going, how did they even do that? I don't understand. This is what they would do. The Soviet Union, during the days, they would go to a Western country, and they'd go, all right, how many people are in France? All right, how much vanilla ice cream do they use? All right, well, that's how much we make. See, we did it cheaper. Of course, it would melt. They wouldn't be able to distribute it. You know, it would go bad. There would be, you know, all kinds of other problems. But, gosh darn it, they made that much vanilla ice cream. Okay, get over it. Here it is. You know? So, they're always trying to create supply for a demand that they don't know how to discover what that would be. And they sure as heck don't use pricing for it. So they would just produce a bunch of stuff that nobody either could afford or wanted, or they couldn't distribute or get it out to, or where's the refrigerated trucks of, and because they didn't know any other way to do it. Supply and demand, a free market, does this kind of stuff. There's going to be a major update. See, I'm keeping something from you guys. I can't. I can say stuff, but I can't back it up because it's a secret. Damn it. All right, we'll be working on that. We'll certainly have it out by the Bitcoin Summit, some stuff that's going on. BreadWallet.com. We're going to look at it.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
You can connect with the Liberty Radio Network via our Facebook page at facebook.lrn.fm. That's facebook.lrn.fm.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. Okay, that's what we've been advocating from the beginning. When we first started Freedom's Phoenix, and we had in our heads in the 90s, but when we first actually started its development, we were like going, you know, what is it that, you know, what's our mantra here? You know, I'm going, it's uncovering the secrets, exposing the lies. I'm tired of being lied to. You know, it's a, because you say truth. What's truth? Who's truth? Where are you going to get truth? How do you determine the truth? How do you, it's a subjective thing of what's a truth. I go, you know what it is? It's not lies. You know, you want to know what truth is? Let me tell you what truth is. It's not lies. So we're trying to find, you know, and I keep asking questions, and I keep, you know, getting sent down, you know, rabbit holes that, you know, keeps more and more information. And this is the information that, you know, I need to share with you so I can incorporate it into my questions and so on. The story that I'm getting, and I start doing some, so I did some search. I was warned not even to do a search. You put these terms together, yeah, gonna be visited. And I'm going, yeah, you know, yeah, get on, you know, add to the list. So it's NIST, the National Institute for Standards and Tech, or something. It's it, you know, these guys are the ones that did, it was jet fuel brought down the World Trade Center. Yep, that's what happened, you know, and the Building 7, what's that? You know, so it's, these are the government agents. I tell you who they are. They're the guys in Atlas Shrugged, you know, the Science Commission that said, Reardon Steele, yeah, we're supposed to say what about it? Yeah, it's what they said. It's bad, you know. And it's always some government agency. It's somebody there that their whole purpose, and they know that their budget is determined how many people and their friends get to work there, and if they get to work there, and their retirement and everything, based on you're here to give a rubber stamp of approval, whatever the hell we tell you in regards to whatever position you have. You're a military general, don't toe the line, boom, gone, retired, fired, killed, whatever. Okay, yeah, you're a scientist for the government. Boom, this is what you say and or do. You're a meteorologist. Man, it's global warming. Hell yeah. I mean, you know, it just goes on and on and on. So I don't believe anything that they say. But one of the things that they definitely do is the government wants to be secret. But they don't want you to be secret. They love for you to think you're secret, and then they got a backdoor into whatever. So the NIST goes to MIT. And we need encryption, okay? We want this uber super duper encryption. What I'm finding out is I do some of the research and everything. They're talking about there's always, since Clipper Chip days and PGP done by Phil Zimmerman and all that, during the Clinton administration, Reno and all these guys, and to say any administration doesn't mean anything other than a timestamp of when this happened, you know? It doesn't mean that one president is any worse than the other. They're all just insulation for what really goes on. So I'm going, okay. They wanted to have robust encryption for them. Now, that's where, you know, the Tor network and everything. And what are we finding out? DARPA, you know, the Defense Advanced Project Pentagon Science, we have robots come kick your ass stuff. The DARPA is doing a search engine for Tor, the network. And I'm going, what does that mean? They're looking at a mechanism by which they can track users and determine usage of and cite all the information that Tor is supposed to eliminate or prevent, or where they're getting the tech. We're going to figure it out. Damn it. You guys are out there being a little too free. Because the transmitting of information, a lot of people don't know. The vast majority, I mean, well over, you know, half again as much or more. I mean, it's a lot. Is on the deep web, and it's not on what most people know as the World Wide Web. It's not www dot. I mean, it's a whole nother thing, and it takes, you know, the Onion browser. It's like you got Firefox, and you got Safari and Internet Explorer, and, you know, whatever, Chrome or something. But you have a Tor browser that goes into another part of communication on the internet. Well, that's much more secure and so on. Well, during this time, and this was not as long ago as you think, like 2007-08 around in there, there was, I'm finding out, an effort for MIT and a computer science department to create encryption that could, you know, great and wonderful. Oh, and by the way, when you compile it and do it in the final stroke and put in this back door. Well, either it was an individual, it was the department as a whole, it was, you know, the computer club up and whatever, and we did it and we didn't put in your thing and here it is and clean and everybody's got encryption and we're done. Because this is what Zimmerman did in, 10 years, 15 years before. So I'm going, okay. So this is of interest. So I'm pulling the threads on this once I start hearing about, because I keep asking, where did it come from? Where did it come from? Well, it's discussed. I mean, a lot of these, you go on online and you'll see, you know, there's a lot of people discussing this and different things that happened and, the chronology of whatever, you know. So you go on here and you'll see NSA infiltration into encryption systems shows the need for Bitcoin and cryptography. People around the world have to trust the encryption companies for their privacy and security of their computer, phone, credit card, the banking system, and more. While there are hacks and exploit holes in those systems, there is a trust that they are not left on purpose. Okay, that there's holes in there on purpose. Unfortunately, the NSA has been working and paying to have back doors and holes left in so they can access any data they want. As posted on the In Category Cafe about the NSA weakening cryptography in great detail, this quote sticks out. The NSA's 2013 budget requests asked for funding to insert vulnerabilities into commercial encryption systems. Many people now know the story of the dual elliptic curve pseudonym number generator used for online encryption, which the NSA aggressively and successfully pushed to become the industry standard, and which has weaknesses that are widely agreed by experts to be a backdoor. Reuters reported last year that the NSA arranged a secret $10 million contract with the influential American security company RSA, yes, that's RSA, who became the most important distributor of that compromised algorithm. The idea, now keep in mind, when's this written? This is, give me a date. They don't have a date. Well, it's, you know, recently. Okay, let's go. Damn it. You'd think they'd have a date. Let's go down to the bottom. Date me October 27th, 14. Okay, so this is, I don't know what, not even 6 months ago. So the idea that security firms are taking money to perpetrate this kind of fraud and unethical behavior is disturbing and shows great greed overcomes most common sense. The ability of the NSA to protect people is important, but not at the cost of every bit of freedom, and in this case, security for the sake of security. The in-category cafe's write-up exposes just how pervasive it is. The NSA's reach is right down to the levels that no form of communication will be beyond the NSA's ability to read or take control of for their uses, even if you are not a suspect. That reach is disturbing in a very primal way. This is scary stuff indeed. As stated on Schneier on security way back in November 15, 07, the NSA security holes run deep, and now years later are still looming. Of course, we have no way of knowing whether the NSA knows the secret numbers that break dual ECDRBG, which is some encryption, I'm sure. We have no way of knowing whether an NSA employee working on his own came up with the constraints and has the secret numbers. He didn't know if someone from NIST or someone in the ANSI working group has them. Maybe nobody does. We don't know where the constraints came from in the first place. We only know that whoever came up with them could have the key in his back to this back door, and we know there's no way for NIST or anyone else to prove otherwise. This is scary stuff indeed. Even if no one knows the secret numbers, the fact that the back door is present makes dual ECDRBG very fragile. If someone were to solve just one instance of the algorithm's elliptic curve problem, he would effectively have the keys to the kingdom. He would then use it for whatever nefarious purpose he wanted, or he could publish his result and render every implementation of the random number generator completely insecure. This reminds me of the movie with Robert Redford called Sneakers. Just look up the movie Sneakers, like your tennis shoes, Sneakers. And it was about, this whole thing was about an encrypted piece of hardware that could decrypt anything. I am of the opinion that there are people of the opinion that the effort to put this in was thwarted by some computer geeks that said, no, we ain't doing it. And we created, and that was the one that showed up in Satoshi Nakamoto's paper, that particular version. And if you were to take that version and compare it with, you know, the version one, I think it was version two or something, you see the difference. That's the back door. That's what these guys are talking about. And I'm going, wow. Bitcoin and most cryptocurrencies are based on open source code so they can compile our wallets. This is, we're going to talk to breadwallet.com
since
about
time
this.
Began.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
except the right dial and button gets pushed. You know, here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. Thanks for coming by. We got a really good lineup for this week and next week. We've had, you know, a lot of getting understanding. We had the BitcoinSummit.info coming up on Pi Day, you know, here in Phoenix, Arizona. So we're going to building up to that. We have, tomorrow we're going to have Michael Turpin from Social Radius on, Eric Voorhees from Coinapult. Let's see, next week, Steve Cohn has got Paul Snow, Bruce Fenton, Jeffrey Tucker, who's your buddy, okay? So we're going to hook you up on this Bitcoin thing, get everything understood. But there was, David Johnston said something from BitAngels. He pointed out at Aaron Voicing, hopefully I'm getting that right, Aaron Voicing, breadwallet.com. It's a first standalone iOS Bitcoin wallet that directly goes like a Bitcoin client into the chain without having to go through other servers. So this is one. Yeah, so is that like a big deal? I mean, you know, I have my opinion, and that sounds pretty cool, but the technical ability, why somebody hadn't done that already? So I'm just going, all right. So welcome to Aaron Voicing. He's an app developer and entrepreneur. He started computer science at Purdue and has done several high-profile apps, including a puzzle game that hit the number two most popular app in the App Store and the app for Yammer, which sold to Microsoft for $1 billion. And the first question is, Aaron, how much of that did you get?
Yammer made a lot of money when they sold to Microsoft, but I just did their app. So
you weren't on the list.
I didn't
huh?
get the whole billion, unfortunately.
All right. Did you get a couple, a little bit of something?
Yeah,
something?
I got compensated for it.
So. All right. Make sure you're good. Okay. Now, Aaron, what prompted you doing, you're doing puzzle games and kind of playing, and I can make money on the internet and I know how to code and it's all good. And all of a sudden you're going, what? What's this Bitcoin thing? What year was that you got interested and started in Bitcoin?
Well, I started off in, I guess, 2008 was when I started getting interested in economics and monetary theory, you know, with trying to figure out what the heck was going on with the banks collapsing, and decided that, like, digital cash sounded like a really interesting way of trying to fix some of the problems that, kind of originated with the banks.
Okay,
and
now,
then,
so...
A couple years later...
Oh, well, let me go ahead and ask you. So I want to interrupt there because I'm feeling this Ron Paul thing coming in. I mean, you know, did that kind of hit with you? You got Austrian economic explanation or something?
Yeah, absolutely. I was, involved in libertarianism for a long time, and then Ron Paul came along and he was talking about, like, the gold standard, and I thought, you know, that sounds kooky, but I'm going to look into it because I respect him, and the more I learned, the more I realized, this guy's onto something, you know, this whole idea of hard money. And then Bitcoin came along.
So
and I was
what
like,
the well, heck does Bitcoin have to do with hard money? Come on.
Well, let me tell you, man.
All right.
So gold had the best monetary properties of anything available in the natural world, in the ancient world, you know, thousands of years ago. It, you know, it's divisible and fungible and scarce and transportable, relatively speaking. And then Satoshi came along and he invented this digital commodity called Bitcoin that has mathematically perfect monetary properties. It's perfectly scarce, perfectly divisible, can be transported instantly anywhere in the world. And when I understood that, I realized that this was going to be big. It was going to eventually take over the whole global monetary system. I don't know if it's going to take 50 years or five. I don't know, but it's going to happen.
It's coming a lot faster than I think a lot of people think. I mean, this is my opinion. At 53, you know, having been through some levolution cycles, I mean, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's all the same crap all the time, same people doing the same stuff. But what was of interest to me is that you have a understanding that it goes distributed down to individuals. It's this distributed mindset. It goes down. And now you got the traits of being, that's why they call it mining, you know, the traits of the discovery of things like gold and so on. You have, anti-inflationary, you know, practices. And, you know, you got 21 million, it's all that can be done and when they're mined and how and the scale that it went. That's one thing that you can answer for me is, we had Michael Goldstein from the Satoshi Nakamoto Institute on yesterday or day before, and he was talking about the what was it? They had a lot of history on their site that goes back to the things that I remember from Crossbows to Cryptography back in November 87. I remember it 88, but, you know, close enough. And he's going, look at all this information and all of these traits of money, the traits that can be duplicated through encryption. And all of a sudden, you're starting to go, okay, well, we can. I went through the e-gold thing. I went through DigiCash. I went through all the, but they never had the right philosophy. What is the philosophy that makes Bitcoin work and so excited by someone that understands gold? And then all of a sudden, squirrel, we're over here doing Bitcoin. And I'm going, you know, how? What's in your head? What intelligence? How many brain cells do you have that all of a sudden gives you that clarity of vision into the future about Bitcoin, and it keeps getting compared to gold? How is that possible?
Well, you know, like I said, it's those monetary properties, but then also, you know, what enforces those monetary properties? You know, instead of the physical laws of the universe with gold, you have this distributed network that no one controls, so no one can change the rules. If they change the rules, they'll just have something that's not Bitcoin. They'll get ignored by the network. And that's why, you know, I think that Satoshi was, you know, maybe one of the most important people for 1,000 years. I don't know, but he came up with something really brilliant that, you know, he figured out how to recreate the monetary properties in a digital commodity that can't be changed, just like the laws of physics can't be changed.
You know, that's one thing I keep going, if they can, they will. You know, and that's, we'll get into your app here in a little bit, because that's one of the, you bypass one more step and getting straight to the, that's good. I wonder why nobody did that. Okay, so we'll talk about breadwallet.com. But, you know, I'm going, okay, Satoshi comes out and he gets, you know, some piece of software from somewhere that built on something. And that's one thing that we went through with Michael Goldstein, was the history of encryption, which I found interesting. I was one of you young guys back in the early 90s going, yeah, baby, we can be secret. And the government went, no, you're not allowed. Yeah. And they freaked out. So it didn't have as much credibility, or I understood it to be, you know, something, a thorn in their side, until you could see how much they freaked out about it. So then I find out, I'm starting to do some research. You go on the first hour of today's show, I put up a couple links there, and the story went like this. NIST, you know, the National Institute of Science, you know, the bought and paid for scientists of the United States government, they go in MIT or and wherever, I'm sure it was MIT, they go in and they say, hey, man, we need some encryption, really super kind of doing, oh, yeah, here's the back door. So I got a bunch of stories here about, you know, NSA putting back doors in encryption, and we got a secret password of, and this was the discussion going on in the Clinton administration with Clipper chips and all this other crap. So then they kind of didn't hear about that anymore because they already had it. Okay, so they do all this stuff, and then there's somebody somewhere that ran it and going, you know what, we forgot to put that back door in, we don't like it. Boom, it shows up in Satoshi Nakamoto's white paper saying, and this is what we're going to use. So I'm going, was it that simple? Was it MIT? Was it a group of people? Was it one kid? Was it, you know, I don't know, it doesn't matter. But my thing is how confident are you that that encryption that they created doesn't have the back door? And how would you know?
I think
For the break. Oh, you had the chance. Oh, in 5 seconds, he couldn't do it. So you got to be on the edge of your seat waiting for Aaron Voisin to come back and tell us. Was NSA putting encryption backdoors and everything? Yes, they are. And how do we know if they're not in Bitcoin? We're going to find out. This is one of the first things that we should know about. We'll be right back.
Did you know that Free Aid is a mutual aid, educational, and networking organization?
Yes, I do. Okay, so Aaron, can you speak to that a little bit? I mean, see, when you're doing the wallet that goes straight to the, you know, Bitcoin client recognition or whatever, you know, I'm going, well, this might be something that we need to know about, or you have, you know, an opinion on.
Yeah, I think that, you know, depending on how technical you want to get.
I just want the truth, and just, you know, don't sugarcoat it, but don't go geek on me, man. You know, I don't need a translator, you know.
I'll just say that, he used a different curve than what the NSA recommends when it comes to the elliptic curve math.
Well, of course they're going to, shit. I'm going, well, hell, what does the NSA recommend I use for secrecy? I mean, are you kidding me? You know, so this is what, but I'm wondering where the source of this encryption, where it came from. Because when he referenced it, that means it already existed. Where did it come from?
Right.
Well, where'd it come from?
Oh, it's just well, it had been around actually before. You know, when they first started working on elliptic curve math, it was one of the curves they came up with. And the properties of the curve have a source that you can explain outside of something that the NSA picked so that they can crack it. So,
okay, so this was it was totally unapproved.
Exactly.
Encryption. Yeah. No. This is not the government didn't approve this one, you know, which gives us its greatest, you know, value. But, you know, so this is, you see where I'm going with this? I mean, it's an interesting discussion, and this part right here gets glossed over, certainly when they're talking to most talk show hosts, you know, and doing this presentation. I'm going, yeah, blah, 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 blah. When Satoshi recommended or talked about this particular, I remember reading the paper, he was talking about certain crime, I'm going, okay, where'd that come from?
You know,
so I start putting that in. I start doing, you know, some search and so on. What am I finding out? You know, NIST went to MIT, created some encryption. Oh, by the way, here's the back door you got to put in. They go, yeah, we forgot.
That's interesting.
Well, I don't know. How far off am I?
That's about right, because he used the Koblitz curve, which, you know, doesn't have the back door or the initial values that the NSA picked so that they can crack it.
Whoa. Okay. So the NSA goes, we're going to have NSA-approved encryption, and we have the starting point of this number and start there?
Yeah, they said start with these numbers, and then you get this curve, and everybody's like, why those numbers? Why did you pick those? And they're like, we're not going to tell you why.
Because, you know, this is one, you know, we had Bill Binney on... when was it? Just recently, and an NSA whistleblower, and he was saying that in their program, their encryption discovery of, and we, you're not secret anymore, they wanted to know the starting point. You know, he was talking about that. You know, if we can find the algorithm, that's one thing he said that Bitcoin vulnerability might be, is that you already know what the algorithm is, and that helps you. You're halfway there, you know. So, but I can see they really get an advantage. They, you know, and the first number you're going to use.
Yes.
All right.
Exactly.
So we'll talk about that. We'll be back in about 30 seconds, and we'll get going there. The see, this is an aspect I could never get anybody. I had to do my own research. What is it? The title of the article is NSA Infiltration into Encryption System Shows the Need for Bitcoin and Cryptography. You know?
Oh, cool.
And this was NSA. I was reading it in the last segment. NSA's 2013 budget request asked for funding to insert vulnerabilities into commercial encryption systems. Oh, I'm so shocked. So, you know, this is, we'll talk about this story and how your system, you know, gets some advantages. Here we go.
Satellite costs with the chip in on the right side of the page at LRN.FM.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Okay, now this is one thing. I was doing some searching, and I was warned by some prominent people, Aaron, you don't want to go down this road. And I'm going, why? Well, just the fact that you even search this stuff and use these key phrases, like NIST, you know, which is national, it's the scientist of government payroll. And they, you know, so they're the ones that stand, they've got the little computer scientist guys and kind of, and they get the parameters from the intelligence community, what they want. And they go, okay, we'll go get that done. And who do they have? Well, you know, all the university system and all the brightest minds of and the computer departments of. I mean, you just, you know, how many, you know, the movies you got to watch, you know, you got to figure out how this works. So they go, all right, we need this encryption. Well, normally what they do is they go to these computer departments and they say, and it must start with this number. All right, explain what you mean by that, Aaron.
So
breadwallet.com. We'll get to it. Okay, go ahead, Aaron.
Okay. Yeah, so I was going to say that Bitcoin uses something called elliptic curve math to do the encryption. And a curve has a set of values that it starts with. And the NSA says, you should use these values over here. These are the ones we recommend you use. And a lot of people are using that. And the presumption is that the NSA picked those values because they know how to crack that particular curve. And Bitcoin didn't use that curve. It used something called a Koblitz curve, which has values to define the curve that that were chosen for a specific reason that you can go back and check and say that, yeah, this is a perfectly valid reason to get these starting values. And it has nothing to do with, you know, the NSA trying to crack it. It's not just random values that the NSA picked. These actually have some mathematical reason why you should pick them.
Okay, now I'm looking at here some slash dot, and it's are the NIST standard elliptical curves backdoored? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. That's okay, that's what I'm talking about.
Are they?
well, the standard ones, that's the presumption. I mean, there's a, you know, we can't figure out why they picked that, and of course they haven't come out and admitted that they backdoored it, but that's the that's pretty much the assumption that everybody who uses elliptic curve math is going on at this point.
Okay, now this is, I you know, kind of marries up with Richard Grove from Tragedy and Hope. I mean, are you familiar with Richard?
No.
TragedyandHope.com. He was an SEC whistleblower, a young guy like yourself that's on Wall Street, and 9/11 happens, and he starts looking at the security software that they had for Wall Street and kind of backdooring and this kind of stuff. And, you know, the he's one big brain box guy, and he can see that, you know, this shorting of airline guy. Hey, man, these guys can see and track me. Shut up, boy! You know, that's why we have them. We're selling this software a gazillion dollars, this other thing, and the value is because of that backdoor, all right? So then he goes through 4 years of SEC whistleblowing stuff and trial and this and that and everything, and then that program is used as industry standard. And I'm going, I'm so shocked. So we see the same kind of thing, exactly what you're talking about. These standards that they want imposed has a backdoor for them to do it to begin with. And as a young activist, I remember in the 90s what happened. In the 90s, there was these hearings on how we're going to standardize hardware. Well, it has to be a modem like this, and the hardware has to be this. This is clipper chip crap. You know, and we're going to have in every fax and every printer and every email and every, or then we wouldn't know, and we can't not know. You're a freaking livestock. You think we shouldn't know what all the cattle's doing? Because damn it, because you're livestock. So this mentality I could see coming. So I'm going, all right, it's not like they don't do it. They've done it, and they've always have, and they sure as hell always want to. So now the question is Bitcoin compromised that way? So I'm going, all right, the argument, the kind of little scuttlebutt behind, you know, the scenes is that, yeah, it kind of snuck out. And the computer department, they didn't put that in, and they're really pissed. And if you compared one version of this with this, you'll see the difference, and you can kind of that, Ernie, don't go down that road. You know, you're like, bad things happen. And I'm going, yeah, well, to Aaron, too, because we're talking about it. Okay, so go ahead.
I was going to say, the other thing I wanted to comment was that you don't have to rely just on that ECDSA curve. Bitcoin uses three different encryption algorithms to protect the money, so that you know, even if one of them gets cracked, there's time to swap it out and replace it with something else.
So that swapping out wouldn't change the base value or usability of Bitcoin.
Correct. Yeah, people wouldn't. I mean,
so you can keep upgrading the software.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, the encryption. You just go, yeah, and this one's better.
Yeah, you can put in a new type of Bitcoin address that uses a different encryption algorithm if one of them were to get compromised or show some kind of weakness, and we thought, well, you know, we better switch before it gets cracked.
So you got three levels of encryption on Bitcoin. It's like, we encrypted it, oh, we did it again, oh, by the way, we'll do it one more time?
Yeah, so it's using the ECDSA and then also two different hashing algorithms. So you'd have to be able to reverse both you know, RIPEMD hash, SHA-256 hash, and crack ECDSA all at the same time in order to steal somebody's money.
And I reckon that's probably like supposed to be hard, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, you've got billions of dollars of incentive to do it. If you can figure it out, you can be a billionaire. So nobody's been able to do it yet.
They're waiting to where they're quadrillionaires. And then they're, yeah. Well, all right. So we'll find out one way or another. But the actual blockchain technology and the ability for its scalability and the network that's created and the speed and the cheapness of transfer, I mean, that's not going away. I don't care what happens. I mean, you know, this is, you know, humanity marches on and the evolution of, oh my God, okay, I get it. But the thing is that how do you get it? And the people that did this, are you looking at one genius guy? It's a team of people. Satoshi Nakamoto is an acronym for government can kiss my butt. I mean, you know what? You know?
I think, you know, he was just somebody who was a cryptographer and thought that, you know, these cryptographer guys have been working on, like, secure email and stuff like this. Digital cash has been a dream of theirs for decades. So, and he finally figured out how to do it.
Yeah, this, what was the book? This Machine Kills Secrets, you know, the cyberpunk kind of thing. You know, Michael Goldstein was really going on about that. Tell me, you know, about, have you, you know about that? What did you glean from that information?
Just that, you know, there's a lot of, you know, they call them crypto anarchists. They're you know, crazy libertarian, you know, kind of like myself, who, you know, believe in the power of technology to empower the individual.
You know what you remind me of? You ever see the movie Captain America Winter Soldier?
Yeah, yeah.
You're on that list, okay? You're the, you're one of the 40 million that we just got to take care of and the world will be under control. Damn it. You know, but is that number growing? I mean, has it got to the point to where this this trying to corral the livestock onto their plantation of because they can? I mean, do you really feel that that is starting to rip apart? The cage is getting open. The people are escaping and anything they can do about it? Short of a third world war? I mean, you know, what's their response?
The internet is just huge in and of itself. The fact that, you know, we can get access to information from shows like this instead of through, you know, mainstream media. That's huge. That's,
mainstream media, the media so last century. Okay. Now, let's not give them too many props. All right. And they're coming out being liars on every freaking time of they open their mouth, you know, like I give you Brian Williams. Anyway, who cares? Brian who? So what we're going to do is in the next segment, we're going to pimp out breadwallet.com and ask some questions about that. I really appreciate, you know, the conversation in the first couple of segments about this because, you know, I'm not as crazy as I thought I was. You know, I'm going, look, man, I know that there's definitely attempt. You know, show me the attempt to where, and I'll show you where it happened or they didn't do it or whatever. NIST and the NSA.
This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty in Arizona. Now more than ever, we have to seek out good investments to help secure our future. The real estate market across the country today seems to have recovered. Inventories are low, housing prices have gone up over the past year, and money is available to lend. But you must be careful to read between the lines of what the mainstream news is reporting. There is a shadow inventory, and the market is manipulated by a multiple number of factors. And we will need to anticipate this flux and prepare for the next market downturn in housing. There are many communities across the country today that have a growing mindset of preparing to ride out the financial storm. And Arizona is one of those places. If you are interested in moving to the desert southwest, where we have 3 to 4 growing seasons a year, and the sun is readily available for anything solar, I will be here to help you when that time comes. Feel free to use my webpage at donnahancock.com to search for Arizona properties that are of interest to you. And please, feel free to call me at 602-828-1819 to discuss options for your move to Arizona.
When we come back, I want to get straight to the bread wallet, but I wanted to get this history so that you can see the niche that you were looking to fill and why, you know, because this is definitely something. And I know David Johnston, man, he doesn't, you know, pimp or mention anybody. He doesn't have some financial interest in promoting. That's just the way he is. Okay. So so what is it? BitAngels or him or his friends, De La, whatever, or you guys went to school together? I mean, what? How's he interested with you?
He's excited about Bitcoin and he just really loves the product. You know, I tried to get him as an investor and he's still on the fence about that, but he loves the product and uses it every day and tells everybody about it because it fills the need that he has for growing Bitcoin, I think. So.
Well, we're doing an event here in Arizona called if you just go look for bitcoinsummit.info. You know, and you'll just, you know, see we're going to, you know, pimp it out. And I've gone to a lot of these, but I can tell what the problem was. It's a bunch of you guys talking to each other and, you know, how, you know, big your intellectual penis is or something, you know. And, you know, the smartest guys in the room showing who's the smartest of the smart and I got more geeky, whatever. And as I talked to these guys over the last, God, since 9-10, I mean, we've been doing, you know, Bitcoin shows. And so I've seen it develop and I'm going, wow, who's the user interface guy? Who's the grandma just button guy? When is that? Because I'm not putting it on my wife's phone until it, and then AirBits came out. When AirBits hit, I'm going, see, this is what I was talking about. A lot of default security, a lot of, you know, features in that, and it's a grandma just button. You can get all geeky all you want behind it, but I need a grandma just button. Now, when Bread Wallet comes up and they you kind of bypass her, even though they're encrypted servers that you can't, and packages of them we don't know. I'm going, okay, that's kind of cool, but still a server. So what you're doing is you're going, no, we're able to bypass that. But
absolutely.
The user interface, how geekified is that?
Well, that was the whole point of the thing, was to make it as dead simple, just this elegant, beautiful user experience that is incredibly simple. Do you actually have an iPhone or?
No, I use Android.
Okay, you should definitely check it out. It's if you have like an iPad or somebody.
Well,
else
I mean,
has
is
iPhone.
It avail? Is it going to be? Is there some technical ability that keeps it from being eventually on Android or what?
Well, there's Android has something of a malware problem, so we're looking at ways to, we think Android's hugely important. We want to make a port for Android that's as secure or more secure than what we can do on the iPhone.
All right. Well, let's go. We're coming back. Here we go.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
BreadWallet.com and its traits, and it's they're working on Android. They got it on iPhone now, so it's like, oh, he's going to pep it for us. He's going to tell us all the cool stuff. All right, Aaron, help me out here. Why so many people excited about BreadWallet? What does it do? What makes it different? Why?
Well, I think what's really attracting users is just the fact that it's a dead simple interface. It literally just has two screens, one to send and one to receive. And it's really easy. People say, it's like the first one that they feel comfortable giving to their mom or their grandma or whatever. Mm. So that's really what I was going for. But then Bitcoin geeks get excited about it because it's an actual Bitcoin network client that's running on your phone. You're actually a node on the Bitcoin network. Connecting directly to the Bitcoin network. So there's no server that could get hacked or go down for instance, other wallets, if the server goes down, you lose access to your money. And that's not really what Bitcoin is about. Bitcoin should be available anywhere where you have internet access. So that's what I wanted to build.
But let's go ahead and understand. I mean, I'm sure there's everybody else understood exactly what you were saying except me. Now,
Okay, sorry. That
when you say you connect to the chain, I mean, you're connecting to what? You're connecting to an individual node, the first one closest by, the first, and then you're able to interface with that based on what? They're allowing this phone, whatever you have, to connect. How is that? Why is that? Explain that mechanism for me.
So Bitcoin is what's called a peer-to-peer network. It means that instead of running on some server at Google somewhere, everybody who's running the Bitcoin software on their computers is operating the Bitcoin network. So what BreadWallet does on your phone is that it actually, your phone connects directly to this Bitcoin network, to all these other people who are running the Bitcoin software directly. That way, if any one of them goes down or goes offline, it doesn't matter because there's always people running the Bitcoin software and maintaining the Bitcoin network. All the people who use Bitcoin are doing that.
Okay, I missed it over the dog. I'm sorry. What?
Okay. Sorry about that. So everybody who is running the Bitcoin software is operating the Bitcoin network. They're part of the Bitcoin network, and the phone connects directly to other people who are running the Bitcoin software.
What is the permission slip by which that's done? I mean, they have to have open to communication between other computers, so your phone is just seen as one of those computers?
Exactly, yeah. So it's kind of like email. Nobody controls email. It's not like, if you run an email server, then you can talk to other servers that are running the email protocol. So the phone runs the Bitcoin network protocol and connects to other computers that are running the Bitcoin network protocol.
So it is the one thing that you offer is that in the zombie apocalyptic future of they're taking out the whatever, is that you're like, any phone that has to or mobile device or access to use your Bitcoin that requires it going through another company or server or something like that, the compromise is not that they could take your Bitcoin, assuming the encryption holds up. Mm-hmm. The compromise is they just don't have access.
Right, exactly. So you know, a lot of other wallets, they have, you know, there's a server run by the wallet company, and if that gets shut down or it gets hacked or, you know, they screw up and their computers go offline, it's like you got to wait for them to bring their computers back up in order to get access to your money. So this Bread wallet isn't like that. It just connects right to the Bitcoin network directly.
Okay, now if I have Bitcoin on the network and I have the password for it and I used another wallet to do it, can I use yours to access it?
So what you would do is you could transfer your Bitcoins from somebody else's wallet into your Bread wallet if you wanted to.
You're talking about, yeah, so see, that's my point. It's kind of like, not I got cash out there and I just got to go pick it up or know where I geocached it or something. You know, I have to use your wallet. Why?
Well, like I said, you know, you can...
Why do you have to use any wallet? I just go, and I don't need a wallet. I mean, I remember when Bitcoin first started, everybody's all geeked out on their laptops with just a bunch of code somewhere. I mean, what is it?
Well, that's exactly what it is. It's a bunch of code that, you know, it's connecting right to the Bitcoin network, and the code is running right on your phone, the same code that people used to run on their laptops. That's exactly what it is.
Okay, well, my thing is that if I have Bitcoin out there, and I can interface with that block of code with my private key to unlock it.
Yeah.
Why do I need worry about it being on another wallet? Why do I got to transfer it to the wallet?
I see what you're saying.
Don't give me access to it?
If you have the private key, you can just import that right into Bread Wallet and it'll work. You give the Bread Wallet your private key and then it can sign Bitcoin transactions for those Bitcoins on that key.
But I need to know what that... See, that's my point, is that I have an account on, you know, so I got blockchain and mycelium and Airbits and some of these others, and for various different reasons and because. So I go, okay, so I have Bitcoin out there on the chain somewhere. It's mine. I'm the only one that's got the private key to it. I'm going, why do I need them? I just go get it. Does Bread Wallet allow me the ability to just go get it?
Yeah, that's exactly what it does.
I don't got to transfer anything.
No, I mean, you can, the way that it works so that you don't have to manage your keys yourself, it gives you this recovery phrase and it generates all your keys from that recovery phrase. So when you want to, pick up your private keys, you just import it into the wallet and it'll transfer it onto one of the keys that are controlled by the wallet. That way, you know, if you lose it or whatever, you can get all your money back from that recovery phase.
Okay. Man, I just want to make sure I understand here, because this is an important advancement in this kind of, you know, damn it, you're not allowed to take my stuff, you know, or prevent me from using it. I could use any wallet I got, you know, because that's the one thing about the chain. I mean, it's like it's out there. Everybody can see it's out there. Somebody, all right, it moved. It went over there. Why? Who did it? I don't know. You know, whatever. But the thing is that if I have access to that chain, I can control it and I can move it into wherever I want. And your device goes straight to the chain. Then I can control my Bitcoin that I have from 15 gazillion other wallets and accounts and whatever. It doesn't matter. And I can still access my money from anywhere in the world as long as I can get internet access to make the move.
Right. So, yeah, you need the private key and access to the internet. And, you know, of course, you need some Bitcoin software to actually make it happen. And that's exactly what Bread Wallet does. It doesn't rely on any servers or anything like that.
Okay, why did you do this? I can see right there, that's, you know, kind of, then they can never know. Because let's say I have a particular, and that's one question that I've had, that's why I was interested in talking to you, is because when I go out and I use a wallet for this digital currency that's supposed to be out there and whatever, I go, why do I need them? I mean, I can see it being a user interface and make it easy and it's got, you know, bells and whistles and stuff, you know, but I mean, I still have the passwords to this stuff that's out there. I mean, I just need to be able to get it or move it. And I'm going, all right, I don't really have to have the user interface of some wallet. And yours kind of pared down to where you just get direct access to the Bitcoin without going through another server or company or service.
Right. I mean, think of it like the web, you know, or the internet. It's like the internet's out there and anywhere that you have a computer, you can get to it. But you need a web browser, right? You don't need Google server necessarily, but you need something to browse the web with. You need something to connect to the network with, and that's what Bread Wallet is. It just connects directly to the network.
How long have you been working on this?
Started the project a little over a year ago, so
Yeah,
with this intent from the beginning is like, look, absolutely, man, I just want to get access to the chain and get, and I don't need, and I don't have to have a server or a company or anything. I just got, let me think, software on my smartphone and I'm done.
Yes, exactly. That's what I wanted to do was I saw, you know, was really interested in Bitcoin and trying to figure out what can I do to, you know, help drive Bitcoin adoption, help spread it to more people. And I thought what we need is a really dead simple, you know, beautiful app that is running the Bitcoin software right on your phone. So that's what I set out to do.
Okay, this is, you know, people went to more features, more user interface ease of Grandma Just Button, and then some guy went up and just said, now we're just bypassing the whole thing, and it's just, I'm going to go take a wheelbarrow to my money when I want it.
Yep.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world?
Yes, I am. Okay, the concept of this, you know, you kind of, you know, sprung up and you go, all right, well, there's a need for this. What was the need? Who was clamoring for just give me a mobile device that goes straight to the chain?
Well, the problem was that, you know, if you're running on your desktop or some other device, you know, you get a piece of malware on there and it can steal your Bitcoins. It's digital cash. So I wanted something that was secure even for people who don't understand anything about computer security. You know, grandma who will click on any email attachment and get malware on her computer. If she's running a web wallet, she's going to get robbed. So needed something that was more secure.
Okay, well, how is it secure that way? I mean, you know, it's where's the lack of secure? I mean, you got to have. See, when I do the transactions in any wallet, there is, of course, the use of my private keys, you know, to do this, and it's all internal, and I'm trusting something, you know. So you're saying that there are abilities to get in, and if their software isn't good enough, they just, you know, say, well, your phone is now our phone, and so are your Bitcoin.
Right, right.
Well, how does this eliminate that? So, what's the difference?
That's why I picked the iPhone as this first platform that we built it on, is that it's better protected against malware than a lot of the other computing platforms out there. Apple restricts what can run on the phone, so that helps protect against malware.
Yeah, well, Apple restricts when they feel like restricting. That don't mean squat to me.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's, you know, that, seriously, you know, didn't we just go over this NSA thing? I mean, you know, how much of freaking Apple is run by the, who freaking knows? I mean, that's, so what you're advocating is that you feel that Apple protects the phone more than most, so you're comfortable with using their operating system to be able to do all your secret stuff on, but that means you got to trust a whole bunch about their operating system.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's a lot of people looking at it, and they have they published a white paper that describes like all the security stuff that and how it works. It uses like the secure enclave to actually store your keys in a hardware encrypted chip on the phone. That kind of, you know, at some point you do have to trust whoever made the device you're using. That's just the nature of electronics.
I don't. Now what?
Well, I mean, then you can't use any electronic devices if you don't. You got to trust them at some level.
I don't. Now what? I go back to gold?
I guess you can use gold. You know, you can store your private keys on paper. But then, you know, when you want to actually spend the money, you have to import it into an electronic device to do the signature.
All right. Well, that's kind of what I learned. I don't trust for just that reason. I had Tuxavan help me out. My son and I, for a day, we flew up to Vegas just to sit down with him all day and him show me how to do Bitcoin paper wallets, you know, and how to take and do that. Now I feel a little better. I mean, you know, okay. I can just, you know, get a little different denomination. Do it. I mean, and I don't know. I don't know. And I know that I don't know, so I want to know how I can do it with people that don't know and feel safe, and I can trade in some silver. Because I see Bitcoin as a silver moving app, you know? It's like, okay. Can I get silver with it? Yeah, okay. Can I trade the silver and get beer? Yeah. Can I get my Bitcoin and get silver? Can I send it across the world and go, okay, then I'm good. I'm done. Western Union can suck it, okay?
Yeah.
So that's really the biggest asset to me. All right, here we go.
This is the Liberty Radio Network, broadcasting the latest liberty-oriented audio content 24 hours a day at LRN.fm.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
happened. He's definitely coming to the attention of some people in Bitcoin with it because it's unique. You know, this is not something that I know that someone else has done. I mean, I thought of this. I thought in the beginning when they were doing, I think it was blockchain.info as a first start coming out with some way to access Bitcoin or even have a list. And then you got, you know, then it progressed from there and you can put more details on each transaction and it can automatically default to change the address every time you send or receive and it gives you your wallet and you kind of, you know, dab, 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 dab. I'm going, that's cool. And it can export, you know, the information that you put to that transaction. So you can do an Excel spreadsheet of, you know, QuickBooks and your taxes if you care. You know, your tax, make it easy for you to do your taxes and using Bitcoin. You want to do your taxes. So this ability to give all these services to people is not necessarily what breadwallet.com is about. Breadwallet.com, I'm getting the impression, help me out here, Aaron, is that it is a simple, but simple, straight access to on my phone. I go, but I'm still kind of trusting Apple to make sure that it doesn't have stuff I don't want it. And when they do an upgrade version of and a change and we got, and I'm going, okay, then that gets upgraded on your phone. I mean, mm-hmm. Right? I mean, you're not putting thou shalt not upgrade iOS software anywhere, right?
Well, you want upgrades, right? If they find a security hole, you want them to patch it and get your phone patched as quickly as possible. That's one of the reasons that I picked Apple as the platform to build BreadWallet, because Apple has a lot fewer instances of malware, problems with malware that can, you know, steal. If you got digital cash on your device, you don't want a piece of malware on there that could steal it.
No, I understand. Yeah. It's just who gets to determine what that malware is. Not me. It's Apple. And if I do the Android platform, we had Brian Sovereign on a couple times mm-hmm. talking about Dark Android and the F-Droid system of that, and it's not Googleized. They go, want to de-Googleize your Android? Well, here, run this operating system kind of then, and it's done, and it's ours now. And I go, okay, at least they're thinking that way. And I'm going, you know, I understand, you know, iPhone's probably more secure than others, but, you know, and then they're downloading Jennifer Lawrence naked pictures. I mean, you know, so I'm just putting trust in someone else to give me their upgrade on their system. Well, you want them to be able to fix, you know, a broken system. I go, yeah, but I don't want them to break my system. You know?
Absolutely. Well, the thing with the photos was that they were stored in iCloud, which is on Apple servers, and that's what got hacked. So BreadWallet doesn't store your Bitcoin on Apple servers.
No, I understand. That's not my. Yeah. You understand my point. If I got new software coming in, and even if they go, yeah, but it's open source. I go, oh, well, I'll just get right on that. You know, I mean, like I'll go read it, and I would know the difference. You know.
Well, the idea is that other people will read the open source who are interested in that and have the technical ability to do that, and then they'll tell everyone else if there's problems.
Yeah. So. See, this is the one thing that I go, and I really like the idea and the concept of what you're doing. I will be checking it out, but the main thing is I'm going, yeah, it takes, well, that everybody would know, and before the next blockchain discovery, and within minutes, think minutes and nanoseconds, it's gone. You know, I'm going, and it's ours now, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at, you know, I'm an old guy, man, been around, you know. This is, if they can, they will, you know.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, it's been years, so that's part of the reason why Bitcoin, you know, hasn't taken over the global monetary system yet. It's you know, people have to trust it, and you know, there's billions of dollars of incentive to break it now, and over time, as you know, there's billions of dollars waiting for anybody who can do it, and they can't do it year after year after year. That's how we build trust.
All right, cool. Now, what's the future for BreadWallet? Have you done a funding round? You got more coming? You've released an app. How, you know, what's your promotion of it? How's it going?
Well, yeah, we're consistently like in the top few apps, wallet apps in the App Store, behind guys like Blockchain.info and Coinbase, who have tens of millions of dollars in venture backing. And yeah, we're raising a seed round for to try to get the business off the ground right now.
Well, how much do you need?
We're looking to raise like $1 million, $1.5 million to kind of get an office and a few people, start working on an Android port, and you know, get this thing going.
All right, very cool. Well, I'm glad you got an opportunity to share with us. We're looking at so you can see the Bitcoin Summit. I mean, think of this. I've gone to a lot of these functions, and it's always you guys arguing over, you know, who's better at whatever, and and they all fill niches that need to be filled, and a lot of people have different uses, but the main thing that we're looking at is the new user and a new merchant, you know, someone that comes in. That, and the first thing we've had the most success with has been the tourism industry here. We're talking to different people that have, you know, it's like when you go to a hotel and you'll see all these Slim Jims in a rack that show you, you know, go get my balloon ride and go to this cave and go visit the animal at the whatever. So we're going, look, you know, a lot of, if we can kind of, you include Bitcoin as part of your system, well, then Arizona becomes, you know, like Colorado is for getting high. You know, you go to Arizona for spending Bitcoin and getting high. So, you know, I'm like, this is an opportunity for us. So we need to get these people in there. How much is too much information in one day? Because we're going to do a morning program, history of and this, and kind of understanding. A lunch program we're going to have on the features of wallets like yours. Uh-huh. And I think yours should be included and talked about because it's unique, you know, in a little bit different way that it works. And we'll go in and, you know, you have this and this and this and this concept. And then you go, all right, in the afternoon, it's all workshop. You know, head down, plow. Everybody kind of, you know, in the entrance fee, you get $25 in Bitcoin and let's put it on, let's go. Well, they're going to need to download a wallet. Okay. Uh-huh. Who are the people that would have iPhones, first thing, you know, uh-huh, that would benefit and should get your wallet over others? Get ours, because why?
Well, it's dead simple. Like with other wallets, you don't have to sign up for anything. You just download the app and you go. And the app assumes that you don't know anything about Bitcoin. It assumes that this is the first time that you've ever seen Bitcoin. And so, you know, it walks you through just a few simple things. It explains, you know, simple things like, hey, you know, Bitcoin is a currency that has an exchange rate that changes. That's why, you know, your wallet balance might change a little bit. Just things like that that we don't assume that people already know that when they download the app. So it's designed to be super intuitive so that you can figure out how to use it just from exploring the interface.
Okay, so just how much does it cost to download it from iTunes? They're going to charge me? I give them a buck? What?
No, it's a free app right now. So.
Okay, so iTunes, I go in there and or wherever their app store or whatever it is. I go in, I get that, and slam bam, easy to test out and take a look at the interface and so on. Takes how long?
Yeah, it takes literally like 30 seconds. It's really simple, and that's, you know, what I wanted to do. I wanted to make this this beautiful user experience that's just dead simple, something that you can feel comfortable giving to somebody who's totally non-technical, who, you know, can just barely figure out how to use an iPhone. So.
You know, this is one thing that I really had a problem with. You know, a lot of the people in your position that are smart, you know, mm-hmm, educated, understand all that, they liked it being complicated. They liked, I rule from on top, and you don't know, and grandma can just suck it and pay me as a consultant. Okay?
Grandma uses money too, right?
I could list off a bunch of names, and you already know who I'm talking about. So I'm just going, this guy, I'm like, oh, man, you guys are killing me. Until you come up with the easy button, you know, the old Staples grandma adjust button thing. And the reason I call it adjust button is you guys, they always say, well, you adjust this and you adjust that. You know, you adjust. And I go, come here and show me this adjust button on my keyboard. And they start banging on it. And I'm going, I don't know, that was like 47 keystrokes there, okay? So, I mean, I need a adjust button. Are you advocating this as adjust button?
Absolutely. It's like literally just two screens, send and receive, and that's it. So it's as simple as you could possibly make it. That was the goal. And then underneath, it's a, you know, running all that cool technology that we talked about, where it's connecting right to the Bitcoin network and all that geek stuff. It's like, you know, it's all in there and you don't even know.
This is something, you know, this concept right here, I'm sure that you'll get a mention at the Bitcoin Summit. And if you got people here, what state are you in? Where are you at?
We're in San Francisco.
Okay, well, Davi Barker's coming down to do a presentation on various wallets and the concept, you know, over at Bitcoin Not Bombs. And if you can hook up with him and make sure he gets, I'll send him the show and the stuff and all that, just because that's what his presentation is in the lunch program, is all of these different options. As you got people sitting in the audience, a couple hundred people just sitting there. All right, I heard about this Bitcoin thing. Tell me what's up. What do I got to download? What do I have? Well, one, You need, an iPhone, okay? Uh-huh. And two, a little bit of understanding. We're going to try and provide them. And hell, load them all up. You can have a whole bunch of them. You know, you can send and receive all to yourself and just practice.
Absolutely. All right.
Aaron, thank you very much. I'm glad to hear that there's a whole lot of different opportunities of how you can even interface with the network. That is something we haven't explored enough. Hey, hold on a minute. I want to talk to you. Thank you. Redwallet.com.
Attention.
There we go. All right. Donna's going to take, we have the video and the audio of this, but I got to, finish compiling the show and all that kind of stuff later. And so it'll be a few hours from now. Within a few hours, I'll have it up. Donna will send you the link, the URL to it, and then you can go ahead and do whatever you want, pimp it, and whatever. So
Great. Now
it includes in the archive, some of our off-air conversation too. Donna told you about that. But the if you have some material or something, we're just giving vendors the opportunity and wallets and so on, just get in the bag, because what we're doing is $75 gets you the $25 lunch and the lunch program, $25 in Bitcoin, and $10 in merchandise, like get your coffee cup or something. So that's $60 out of $75, and I'm not making anything. Okay, and I got to pay for some guys to travel and all this other stuff. So I'd be lucky if I break even. That's my goal. But the point was I wanted to keep it and attendance is free. If you want to just come, it's free, but you don't get all the goodies. Now, the point that I wanted to make with you is that this is the perfect opportunity for you to send me some printed little card, magnet, trinkets and trash, flyer, page of something to be incorporated into the grab bag of this is available.
Great. Okay. How many do you need?
We'll max out at 200 people. I don't want to go more than that, because then, hell, half of them need to be volunteers to talk to the other 100,
Right, right. Okay.
So go ahead, and do you know who Davi is?
Is that somebody who emailed me before, or?
Probably not. Bitcoin Not Bombs, are you familiar with
him? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know.
Okay.
That.
Well, he's putting together, some of the flyers and the list and kind of whatever. I'm determining how I'm going to do the promotional thing. But the first one that we're doing is just a Slim Jim, with the artwork on and go and here we go. But he's going to do the presentation on wallets. And I think this concept, because it's so unique, should be included. So, send him something. That doesn't mean he's going to endorse or say nice things, but at least you get included.
Cool. I would love to do that.
He may rip the crap out of you for all I know. I don't know. But that's what we're about, is just want to give these people information. I don't want to sugarcoat it. I got to give them all of the, security issues and different philosophies of how to use it and the different interfaces and, the controversy of if we're going to, kiss Uncle Sam's butt or not and all this other stuff. Because if we don't, they're going to hear about it or find out about it as they get more and more in the space. And then they'll blame me for, holding back information. So I just got to be as open as possible, and we'll use you as part of that information, okay?
That'd be great.
All right. Thanks a lot, Aaron. I look forward to you. Go check out the site, bitcoinsummit.info, and dealing with Davi, because 5 seconds after I hang up, I'm going to forget everything I just said.
All right. No problem. We'll do.
Waiting on you now. All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Aaron.
From Keene in the Shire, the Liberty Media capital of the world, this is Daryl W. Perry, host of FPP Radio News for Thursday, February 12th, 2015. Silver is trading at $16.63 per ounce. Gold is valued at $1,221 per ounce. And according to BitcoinAverage.com, the average price of Bitcoin is $220. Antiwar.com reports with the ongoing ceasefire negotiations in Minsk facing an uncertain outcome, Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko is threatening to introduce martial law in all territories of Ukraine if the talks fail. The comments are in the context of a war that is going increasingly poorly for the government, which launched an offensive against the rebels last month and is quickly losing even more ground to them. While Poroshenko warns the situation could quickly spiral out of of control, it's not clear what he hopes to gain by threatening to give the military effective executive control over the entire nation. After all, the rebels have control over their own territory in Donetsk and Luhansk Oblast, and transitioning alleged control from civilian officials who are using the military and unable to conquer them, or just turning it over to the same military that isn't winning the war now. The only places the military could practically take over are of the western three quarters of the country, which are already under government control.
For over 35 years, Roberts & Roberts has been a trusted source for buying and selling your investment-grade precious metals. They also take Bitcoin for precious metal purchases and permanently removed the minimum purchase order for all orders paid in the digital currency. Call Roberts & Roberts today for knowledgeable advice on investing and a forward-thinking approach to new technologies. 850-478-5270 or online at rrbi.co.
UPI reports police in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, said three Muslim students were shot over a parking dispute, though the father of two of the victims has called the incident a hate crime. Police arrested Craig Stephen Hicks after he allegedly shot to death three students at a condominium complex near the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, on Tuesday. Police said the incident stemmed from a parking dispute between Hicks and the three students. The police said in a statement, "Our preliminary investigation indicates that the crime was motivated by an ongoing neighbor dispute over parking." Chapel Hill Police Chief Chris Blue said in a statement, "We understand the concerns about the possibility that this was hate motivated, and we will exhaust every lead to determine if that is the case." Dr. Muhammad Abu Salha, the father of two of the victims, said he believes Hicks killed his daughters and son-in-law because they were Muslim, saying it was execution style, a bullet in every head. This was not a dispute over a parking space. This was a hate crime. This man had picked on my daughter and her husband a couple of times before, and he talked with them with his gun in his belt, and they were uncomfortable with him, but they did not know he would go this far. The FBI is assisting local law enforcement with the investigation.
When her plush and comfy life suddenly and unexpectedly fell apart, Brooke and her dog Cloud set out to defy the odds. If this is a man's world, as they say, living on the streets is no place for a young woman. One day she awoke in the Redwood Forest and realized she had become a hobo, and would ultimately come to know exactly what it means to survive. How to Be a Hobo by Brooke Willette is available from Amazon.com and all major bookstores.
The Coleman Times from Alabama reports a Prattville, Alabama woman was charged with disorderly conduct Tuesday after offering to perform a same-sex wedding inside a courthouse. Watauga County Sheriff Joe Sittinger says Ann Suzanne DiPrizio was arrested in the probate office when a dispute occurred between her and probate judge Alfred Booth after two women obtained a marriage license. The sheriff said DiPrizio identified herself as a minister and offered to marry the women. Booth has not been allowing marriage ceremonies in his office since same-sex marriage became legal in Alabama. Sittinger said the judge called deputies who found the woman kneeling and refusing to leave in an apparent protest. Sittinger said DiPrizio was released on $1,000 bail. The U.S. Supreme Court on Monday announced it would not block same-sex marriages from taking place in Alabama. The High Court will hear oral arguments in April and is expected to issue a ruling by June regarding whether same-sex couples nationwide have a fundamental right to marry, and whether states can ban such unions. This has been FPP Radio News, online at fppradio.com.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! We are not afraid!
Lance from here in the Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, A from the BEAUT, full studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenixville.com. Okay. David Einstein. Now, I recognize this name before. I'm going, where do I know this from? He is a well-known Democrat here. I mean, he ran for Attorney General back in 90, you know, back in the day. So he built a successful law firm, and he has, you know, it's like 20 attorneys, 50 employees. I mean, he's a going concern. But they wanted to make sure that the left was represented politically in opposition to Karl Rove super PACs kind of thing. Well, you know, the case that was Supreme Court in the Citizens United case, which opened the floodgates for dark money. Okay, let me go ahead and give the description here. By ruling that corporations and unions and individuals could give unlimited amounts of money to super PACs. So there's a chunk of money somewhere for somebody to do whatever the heck they want. Money be not the problem. Well, the left, they're like, no. See, we're up against, you know, might as well be corporatism. You know, this is a major problem. So what they're doing is they're going, we're going to create a PAC that the left will never be left out again. You know, that's their concept. So what we're going to go ahead and do is what?
Hit the mixer.
Why? Well, you got to start it. You haven't started it. You know, this is the one thing that we want. Yeah, we're doing because we had the phone lines went out. They tore up our alley, and they're still connecting the phone lines and so on. So we're dealing with that. Well, what we want to go ahead and do is we're going to have him on, and I want David Einstein to explain to us how it is that we're going to get the. Is he going? There he is. Oh, see how it works. It's all good. Okay, we'll just go ahead and go. We can do the video if we like or not. Let's go ahead and I've been introducing you to the audience here, and let's go ahead and talk because you're you know, been around in Arizona a bit. You know the politics here and how things work. So the one thing that I want to make sure we understand what Monsta Super PAC does, it's a representation of the left. You know, the left will never be left out again. And what you're trying to do is provide parity with the Karl Rove super PACs of, you know, Koch brothers, you know, Sheldon Adelson, billionaire of We Rule the Planet. And you're going, no, we want to do what we can do over here. Now, tell me, Monsta, why is that called Monsta? Is it play on monster or what? I mean, what does Monsta mean?
Yeah, it's a play. I think that's a great way to describe it, a play on monster. It's a play on super PACs, actually. We hate the Citizens United decision, and, you know, it's enough money in politics already. But, you know, we're a progressive-leaning independent, and we need to have we need to be on the playing field with the other side, the billionaire class. And to get on the playing field, you've got to do things like have super PACs while they're the law. I mean, Citizens United is still good law in the United States. It is our United States Supreme Court. We have a separation of powers in this country. And so while that
since
is
when?
Still good law.
Since when? I mean, as an attorney and having run in your bio, you had run in 90 for attorney general here in Arizona. So you're not unfamiliar with how things really work. I mean, you're talking to a libertarian longtime activist, if I get it. I mean, you know, don't tell me stuff I know is not true. I mean, you know, the government is just they're bad. OK, so you're going to try and make it good. How? By just evening out the distribution of resources to other causes that aren't overwhelmed by, you know, Karl Rove-isms. I mean, you know, how close am I?
You're very close. You're very close. It is evening out. It's not, we're not going to even the playing field. We're just going to play on it, okay, with them. And we're going to try to give them enough competition that we could swing a few races for Congress. And that's about what we can expect to accomplish in our efforts.
Where are you going to focus your effort? Is it Southwest, California, Arizona? Is it nationally? Is this how big a goal do you have?
Well, we have a goal to improve the Congress of the United States. So I guess that means that our goals are national. We're not going to be in every district, obviously. We're going to be in districts of our choosing. And one of the reasons why I formed the Super PAC, Ernest, is When I moved to California, eventually I got over to the coast in Carlsbad and found myself in Daryl Issa's district. And he rubbed me the wrong way, to say the least, and motivated me to form a super PAC along with the Citizens United opinion, which made me believe that there would be no politics as we know it in the United States. And certainly if you wanted to play in the game of politics, you had to be able to get on the playing field. So we're trying to get there. We have Monster PAC Network 2016 that we're launching on February 28th in Santa Monica. And we're going to have a great venue there, and it's a 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. meeting. Love to have some of your listeners come over. I know that we're not necessarily all of the same political stripe, but we have enough in common that might be interesting. Anyway, so our biggest issue is in our district, in District 49 of California, and one which Mr. Issa doesn't seem to take any notice of, he turns a blind eye to it, is the fact that we've got a nuclear waste dump sitting over here about 18 miles from where I'm sitting. That's known as San Onofre Nuclear Generating Station. And it is now it's shut down, but they haven't done anything with the waste. They haven't moved the waste. They're not going to move the waste. They don't plan, the Edison, the company that is responsible for that facility, doesn't plan to move any waste. And it's not it's not neutered. It's not neutral. It's very dangerous, toxic waste. And any kind of an earthquake or tsunami in the area could cause havoc, and not only havoc, but many lives to be lost. And
so that's one of the main issues that you're going to use in your opposition in his campaign. So he's pretty much, you know, can see it coming that the nuclear waste is going to be used as one of the issues in this upcoming congressional cycle.
That's right.
Okay. So what are some of the other issues?
Some of the other issues include the fact that he is the climate change denier of the year. He is the guy that he's not a scientist. I mean, he uses stock phrases that are right out of the Republican playbook to describe his climate denial. But, you know, that's not really working too well for them. The public isn't buying that. The public realizes that things are changing in this world. And climate change is, whether you believe it's caused by humans or not, it really doesn't matter. It's happening. And, you know, the denial of it is really not helpful. And so we need candidates, and we need to support candidates that, will accept the fact that we've got to make some changes and adjust to the climate change.
Well, like what? I mean, you know, some people have the opinion, yeah, it's called the sun, and that's going to change, and it goes up and down, and kind of, you know, warmer's better than colder, and then it might go, hey, man, it's starting to get cold, and it goes back and forth, and it doesn't, you know, for me, my concern is, okay, and how is public policy changed? What restrictions, what freedoms are going to be curtailed or increased, or what? So when we come back, we're going to talk about the opportunities for a candidate to represent the progressive mindset with enough money, and what could we expect? What's the rhetoric? What are the issues? Well, we've talked about climate. We've talked about nuclear. And I see documentaries of progressives like starting to embrace nuclear. Now what? I mean, you find out it was the Koch guys that like going against nuclear so they can sell more oil. I mean, you know, it never stops. We'll be right back.
This is Donna Hancock with Brett.
Yeah, no, I've been, you know, you get to have your say, man. Don't worry about it. We'll go through everything. Well, I tell you what I'm really interested in. We'll get into all your issues and such. But what I'm really interested in is some of the details of a super PAC to begin with. You know, a lot of the biggest education I got a super PAC was from Stephen Colbert. I mean, you know, I'm going, yay, I understand, you know. So,
right.
So this.
Know, you know, Stephen Colbert is someone who encouraged me to do what I've done. I feel like, you know, what I'm doing is somewhat of a satire myself. You know, Monster PAC, come on. We're not a monster. We're not big like a monster at this point. We just want to basically poke the eye of the billionaire class of super PACs and say, look, you know, you're not alone here. We're going to play on this playing field with you as long as the law allows it. And that's our mode of operating.
Well, so, where'd your resources come from? I mean, you create this and you go, okay, now who wants to give us money to do it, and why would they?
Well, that's a good question. And I think there's plenty of progressive-minded people around who have $500 to devote to progressive causes. And that's all we ask for. We don't ask for their billions. Oh, wait, they don't have billions. We ask for $500 and ask for them to have a couple of their friends and or relatives do the same thing, and for those people to go out and find two or more people each to all do the same thing. And before you know it, you've got the principle of doubling working for you. 2, 4 becomes 8, becomes 16, becomes 32. It's very simple.
Well, you have to have support for the causes, and it looks like you kind of threw a large enough net to try to include a lot of these donations. I mean, you know, I can see it's kind of a progressive platform of, okay, these things is what we are advocating for, and against these bad guys, now give us money so we can go do that, which is, I don't know how else you would do it. I mean, that seems like, you know, how they, them, those do it. The ones won't leave me alone. But the I'm interested in the policies that you have and how they were vetted and who came up with them and why. And is there a focus group or there what is near and dear to people that created the PAC and you're marketing it now? Or have you gone through the DNC? Are you dealing with some large donors in Hollywood or something? You see, these are the basic questions, because we can see with this ruling that you're going to, all right, we're going to have to compete. Well, we're going to do it this way. And I'm wondering, you know, how the issues were picked and how they were vetted in order to do this. And why climate change? Was it, I don't know, because it's popularity, because it's importance to the people behind the program? I need to understand the motivation for doing it and what the end result would be.
I appreciate that.
Okay, so when we come back, that's what we'll do, okay?
Great.
All right, we'll be back in about 40 seconds.
You can sign up to receive the latest about the Liberty Radio Network via our email updates at updates.lrn.fm. That's updates.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Full studios of Freedom of the Nats, freedomsphoenix.com. Okay, David Einstein, you know, ran for attorney general, you know, here in Arizona. Nice, so he's familiar with Arizona politics. You know, he's kind of, you know, got a beat on it. That's what he's up against. I mean, it's this red versus blue thing. And I got a good dose of it, and you may not know, but I was on Air America for a while as one of their talk show hosts. You know, I know all the progressive guys, been on a lot of their shows. I was producer for Charles Goyette. We were over there for 2.5 years. I mean, we just, you know, go give him what for. We know the Drobnys and so on. And so we kind of got a bead on a progressive. And I tell you, libertarians, increasingly, we find, certainly with the youth, a lot more in common with the left, as perceived by, you know, the strata, than we do with the right. Because the left, I always believed, and my experience has been, that they want to have a benefit to the individual, to people. They want us to have better life. It's just how they go about it. You know, we're going to, yeah, and a government program is not the way. But so our goal was the same. The Republicans on the right, certainly the Karl Rove ilk and such, you know, it's like, ah, man, we rule you. You know why we should rule you? It's because you're letting us rule you. You know, we're going to rule you until you stop us from ruling you and get over it. And you're just, cattle. So I'm going, all right, this perspective is a little bit different from both sides, and where do the libertarians come in? The libertarians are like, hey, man, peace, freedom, do whatever. I don't need a Citizen United decision to tell me it's my money. I do what the heck I want with it, you know, because the money is going to do whatever the heck they want with it anyway, no matter what, get over it, okay? So that's what we would, look, stop trying to control all this stuff. And certainly if you're going to have an opportunity for one side to raise a bunch of money and do stuff, well, you know, everybody should be able to. All right, fine. So they're taking advantage of this. Monsta Super PAC. Now, Monsta is, I get the impression that you're going to be, at least initially, focusing on congressional districts in Southern California, and there's a lot of progressive money out there, man. You show some, a little bit of, we got something started, and we got a target, and we got somebody's buy it, everybody, we want to go after them. You're going to start building up, you know, for a candidate. Do we have any candidates that you're promoting for, or are you just using this to go after ones you think are bad? So what's the focus of Monsta?
We are considering candidates, and we will have candidates that we will support. And you're right. It's no accident that our launch celebration is in Santa Monica, which is right next to L.A. and other parts of the West Los Angeles area. Yes, we are going to expand out of District 49, but we're going to still oppose Daryl Issa because that's where we live. We were within earshot practically of San Onofre, the nuclear plant. And of course, San Clemente is only 2 miles from San Onofre, and 20 million more people are within 50 miles. So yeah, it involves all of Southern California, but that's just the beginning of it. You know, we don't have any way in this country to dispose safely of nuclear waste. I mean, you gotta agree. Maybe you don't have to, Ernest, but there is no safe way to dispose of nuclear waste in this country. Yucca Mountain didn't work out. And so why are we continuing to produce nuclear waste if we can't dispose of it safely?
Now you get thorium breeder reactors and burn it and get rid of it and then don't make it anymore. And there's technology that does it if you're not trying to make bombs. I mean, you know, there's so many solutions, but it's never you get to the truth. I mean, there's nobody really wanting, it's just an issue to give us more power to rule you and new reason du jour. I mean, you know, I and I'm looking for this as I can see this as be an important issue, certainly after Fukushima and a lot of other problems, the aging. Heck, we have Palo Verde out here, one of the largest in the planet, that was done 30 years ago. I mean, it was the last time they built. They might want to build more, and the technology. But there's more behind this than just nuclear. I mean, there is. I'm sure that they're in line with this, and the people that would support that effort that has a more. What philosophy? I mean, what other issues? I mean, because you got somebody in there on that issue, they're going to, you know, toe the line on what Monsta wanted them to do on what? Economics, monetary policy, foreign policy, war, you know, entitlement programs. I mean, you got to, you know, paint a larger picture for me.
Well, you know, the larger picture is that so far we've decided to specialize on public health and safety issues. And I know that's still a broad area, but it doesn't include national foreign policy. It doesn't include the problem of the disappearing middle class exactly. So its emphasis is on public health and safety issues. And I'll tell you, you know, we have some basically unheard of issues that we're supporting. One of which is the automatic external defibrillator. We want to see those proliferated. We need more of those. We have 360,000 people a year dying in this country outside of hospitals of sudden cardiac arrest. We want to see these little numbers proliferate into the big box superstores. Why not? They sell them online, but they don't have them in their stores. They sell them online for about $1,000, but they can't have an AED in the big superstore where people have to walk a mile or so to get all their stuff. And of all stripes, I mean, people, this sudden cardiac arrest hits all of us. It's not just young people. I mean, it isn't just old people. It's young people. I mean, an Olympic star was struck down by a sudden cardiac arrest.
Now, I tell you, when it became a big deal here in Arizona, there was a legislator died on the House floor. I mean, boom, done, next. And then they got one in there. Another legislator had a heart attack saved by this device. So I'm going, okay. So we have one of the promotional, a libertarian group. It's a, you know, freedom-oriented kind of, it's called Free Aid. And that's all, you know, providing to the liberty community. Instead of looking for a permission slip or a government program, we just have volunteer doctors and nurses, and we just do it. You know, well, part of that training at these festivals are these devices, and they teach you how to use them because you can see them around different places. But the thing is I'm looking for this. The philosophy is like when you say, well, we need more of these. So we need to what, you know, make a law, mandate it, encourage, incentivize it. I mean, how are you looking to get Walmart to get more of the defibrillators?
Well, there's already laws that pertain to AEDs in most states and the federal system. All of the federal buildings, for example, are required to have AEDs. All the courthouses do. Even the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which recently rejected our appeal from the district court in California, asking the court to say that there may be a duty, and not to declare somebody in breach of that duty, but to at least acknowledge that there could be a duty under common law for a big box store to furnish its stores with an AED. And they succeeded so far in the courts, in the Supreme Court of California, where we've been, and the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, where we've been. Now we're going to the United States Supreme Court this month. And we'll see what the U.S. Supreme Court does with our petition for writ of certiorari, which are unlikely to be granted in terms of a hearing on such a writ. But we're going to go for it.
You're asking for what relief? You're asking for a requirement of what?
Well, the relief that we're asking for in court, I believe, is consistent with maybe some of your feelings in terms of what the level of government regulation we can afford or not afford. It's asking for the courts to declare that, in fact, it could be negligent for a company of the size of a big box superstore like Target Superstore in Pico Rivera, California, where Marianne Verdugo killed over backwards.
Using liability. I didn't understand
Should
this.
Should you be able to earn an honest living free from senseless government interference? The Institute for Justice thinks so. That's why we've spent years defending hardworking men and women from pointless government regulation.
Whoa, that's not the commercial you want. Okay.
That's okay with me. That wouldn't require the government regulation. It just requires the application of tried and true standards of common law. That's really the bottom line. But of course, my clients, who are the survivors of Marianne Verdugo, 49-year-old, who died unexpectedly of sudden cardiac arrest in that Target store without an AED being present, they are asking for a tried and true application of the negligence standard that we've been using for centuries in this country, and let a jury decide. And we've been deprived, my clients have been deprived of a jury trial. We're going to the United States Supreme Court on the issue of right to jury trial in a federal court.
I'm going to give you a situation that, you know, parallels this from a different perspective and get your opinion. You'll see what my audience and I are thinking of, okay? There was, after 9/11, they started doing the metal detectors. You go down, and we had a pizza restaurant. My wife would go down to pay the sales tax thing. We'd keep it, and it'd be a day. She'd go get her hair done, whatever, on Wednesdays, once a month, or whatever. So she goes down there, and she's a real estate agent. So she always had a .38 revolver in her purse. You know, you're pretty. You're out in an abandoned home, and you're mine now. I mean, you know, that there are real estate agents being killed here. I don't know if you remember that. So,
I do. So
of course, my wife, I'm going, oh, hell no, man, you know, damn gun. So Arizona, that's like, you know, not a big deal as much as it is, you know, probably in Southern California. But at the time, when she would go to pay the taxes, Mark Killian, that used to be Speaker of the House, then was the Director of Department of Revenue here in Arizona. Oh, no. Metal detectors, you can. All right, fine. So she checked it with the security guard they had up front. Then it got to where, now we don't want to check it anymore in violation of the law. So we made a big deal out of it and so on. I go down. They deny. We go straight to the Supreme Court on a special action. So the rule was, if the government was required to do something and they didn't, or they were prevented from doing something and they did. Well, they weren't complying with the law to check it, whatever, we file a big case. Well, the reason we did this and brought a lot of attention to it was we're going down the road that you are. We're going, if you're preventing someone from even bringing their firearm onto your property, it's Walmart, we have a policy, and everybody was going, and it's, you know, this mentality coming from the bean counters and the accountants and the lawyers, and they go, oh, no, we don't want the liability of having guns here, or even say that you're not allowed. So we're going, all right. Well, what happens is that your lights are out, they get raped, murdered, and robbed, and whatever happens in your parking lot, you didn't have an IED, I mean, or whatever you call them, the defibrillator. You didn't have an AED. You didn't have even the freedom of the individual to defend their own life. How much higher you held liability because they got murdered out in your parking lot, and you prevented them from being able to protect themselves, and you didn't provide them protection. So all of this research, when we did in the... You get, you know, the reply and the response and all that, boom, we just flooded all that in there as a foundational use of information for future liability on these things. And it started getting used, using exactly what you're doing to emphasize the higher level of liability because they didn't allow for people to protect themselves. All of a sudden, you know what, in Arizona, it's unrestricted concealed carry now. Okay? And the reason was exactly what you're talking about. How responsible are the big box for not providing for the health of their people, but worse, not allowing them to do it themselves? It'd be like saying, you can't have the AED, you know? So anyway, that's where we're going. All right, here we go.
Fascinating. I thank you for telling me about that. That is something that I didn't live
through. Going, there aren't any roads.
All right, we're right back. You know, this is using the courts for activism and so on is not new to us. I mean, we've done this kind of thing. I was describing to David the same idea that you would go to he has a case for the Target. They didn't have the defibrillator that could save, and how come you don't? And your higher level of liability because, you know, the people in your facility were at risk because fill in the blank. Well, our thing was we did the same thing, but it was on a firearms issue, which may be totally different, you know, from the perspective that David has, but we're using the same mindset. And we knew that this was going, the left was going to go, damn it. You know, I hate when libertarians do this stuff. Because what we did is we go, look, if I go to Walmart and I, you know, get, you know, raped, murdered, and, you know, take advantage of and robbed and dead and whatever out in the parking lot or anywhere there, and something happened because you denied me the ability to defend my life. You said I can't defend myself. I can't have a firearm, even in the parking lot of my car. So I'm going, okay, well, is their liability increased? Are they responsible for my safety when they prevented me from taking care of it? Well, this was an issue that we hammered on like 10, 11 years ago, that, you know, safe, Second Amendment is for everyone, our organization, and we're doing and whatever. And the point that we wanted to make was, okay, well, you are held to a higher liability using the same argument that he's doing on this AED thing, the defibrillators for people, that these organizations, if they're not going to allow me to bring, be like saying, nope, you can't have your own defibrillator. You're not allowed. And I'm going, really? Well, let's defend my, I didn't use it aggressively. I didn't hurt anybody. I'm legal. It's, you know, protected by Constitution. All this argument, are they held to a higher liability if I get hurt and they didn't provide the security for me? So I'm going, well, what say you, David, on that argument?
I like it. I mean,
you can understand it. I mean, it's the same thing you're doing, right?
Yeah, it's very similar. Absolutely.
Okay, I applaud that we can think the same way. We just use it for different things. We have an emphasis. And that's one thing in Monster Pack, when you're coming in, the emphasis on such things, you get your guy in based on whatever issue it would be. I'm wondering, you know, the support's coming from where? I mean, you have some wealthy individuals, some passionate activists, the DNC is yay, go, and the anti, we don't like this Republican, what's his name? I mean, where's your base support coming from?
People who hate ISA.
Oh, so he's got a fan club, huh?
Yeah.
Let me give you your opportunity. Tell me about him. I don't know who he is. I mean, Congress, you're confusing me with someone that cares about these guys. They all want to rule me, you know? So he's particularly bad because why? How long has he been in?
He's been in for six terms, and three of which have been in District 49 of California. And he is, he's a joke. I mean, he runs a kangaroo court. He did as chairman of the House Oversight Committee. And he came up with, manufactured some scandals, that didn't work out so well for him, like, Benghazi and, others that, he thought were really significant, not the least of which was the IRS standard, scandal that didn't go so well for him either. And really, he didn't accomplish much in his tenure as the chairman, and now he's out as chairman. We would like to take credit for that in campaigning against him the last couple cycles, but I don't think we should. I don't think we can, because I think his own caucus is probably a little bit sick and tired of his antics.
Well, being at this level, having run for attorney general as a Democrat, I'm sure. And
No, I ran as a Republican.
Really?
I had switched from the Democrat Party to the Republican Party in 1989 and ran as a Republican. And the reason that got me going there in 1989 was I felt like Ev Meekham had been the victim of a kangaroo court in our state legislature.
Yeah.
And so I basically said, hey, I want to run for attorney general and end this foolishness of persecuting people who you don't agree with on political grounds through some kind of jimmied up kangaroo court process. And so that's how I got into politics in Arizona. I'd always been interested. I majored in government in college. I hadn't run for office prior to the time I ran for attorney general. I lost, as you know. And I gradually found that I was more comfortable with people who think like you, Ernest, than I was with conservative Republicans. And so I became an independent, not a libertarian. I became an independent after I got to California 13 years ago. And since then, I have become progressively progressive. And I'm still an independent. I'm a registered independent. That's not, that's not something that the Democrats in my area or in California universally like, and that's fine. Can't please everybody, but that's how I feel. And yes, I am a progressive now. I have always been an environmentalist friendly guy, and I feel I'm definitely a guy that's for the underdog.
You know, and one thing that I apologize. I'm sorry.
I think that we do have some common ground in that respect, but obviously we have a lot of things to disagree on.
You know, not necessarily. I mean, it's just method. You know, we're always, you know, I got 6 grandkids. What do I want? You know, I want them to be happy, healthy, productive, and be able to access, you know, their talents and the freedom to do so with leave me aloneism, you know? And it's just, so it's not that we want anything different. It's just that I always find from the left, they're thinking that they need permission, or they got to have sanction from some government entity that's going to, you know, give them a permission slip to something, you know. And I'm going, man, that's you already lost if you think you got to ask permission. I mean, you know, so I'm looking for a mechanism by which a changing culture. I mean, we do a lot of cultural stuff. You were here during the 90s that, you know, I was Maricopa County chairman of the Libertarian Party. You know, when Buttrick was running for governor, I was running for secretary of state. I've run for Congress 3 times against Shattuck. I mean, you'll like that one, you know. So, I mean, I ran against John McCain for U.S. Senate. I mean, it is, you know, I get the, oh, we're going to doinking on the chest of the bear, you know. But the thing is, was never thinking we're going to win votes, because I don't trust the system anyway. What we're looking for is a cultural shift of what's important and how we can express ourselves and be able to have a say, you know, in certainly the culture. I think voting is more like a side effect. So I encourage what you're doing as just being able to have another voice out there and the freedom to spend your money and do whatever the heck you want and advocate and bring the news up and people and look at this guy. So I'm like, cool, and I want to help. Eileen Proctor, she's always got, you know, interesting guests, you know, for me that she said, you know, let's get Dan, I'm done. You know, I think this is of interest to us because I can see with this Citizens United ruling, the left is going to have to do this. In fact, Stephen Colbert taught me more about super PACs than anything else. I thought that was awesome, you know. And you said that he encouraged you guys to do this?
Encouraged me to found and form the super PAC in 2012, which we
personally
got off,
or just by example?
Oh, by example. By example. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't know Stephen Colbert, but I do. I enjoyed watching the show till he went off the air. But it's that kind of activism for, you know, satire's sake, that as it was at that time, I believe that was mainly his goal. But he was making points. He was making good points about it, about the process.
Oh, he was my freaking hero when he did the White House correspondence speech. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's made some very good speeches. And
Input into the culture, because you would see that his audience, you know, a lot of them kind of libertarian leaning, you know, they like this Ron Paul thing. You know, there's no getting around that. But, you know, it's still even that heart of maybe a different mechanism to accomplish what you want still has at, you know, its heart, at its core, the desire to do good. You know, it's just a definition of what good might be. And the list of things that you're advocating, certainly, you know, climate change. You know, we want to, you want to bring attention to all this nuclear waste sitting on the beach somewhere. You know, that'd be bad. You know, you have a lot of the other issues that I'm sure that you want to advocate. You know, what are some of the other issues you think might make it into a campaign for this gentleman's opposition?
Well, I think that you're going to find the next one that I mentioned to be intolerable.
Gun control.
No. I'm not there. I'm not there yet.
Okay. Yeah. We'll get there.
I want to have body mounted video cameras for the police officers.
Oh, body mounted video cameras, police officers. Oh, we're all over that. We got a lot of play. See, there's a lot of accountability. We're talking about accountability more when we come back. David Einstein. Monster, M-O-N-S-T-A-H, a monster super PAC, the left will never be left out again. David Einstein, when we come back.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
What if the key to achieving liberty in your lifetime was to move together with others who think like you? Liberty activists are joining the Free State Project, which is over 70% of the way to its goal of 20,000 participants. And they're already making the move to New Hampshire. The successes are piling up and are proving the Free State Project is a real movement and no longer just a great idea. When you're planning your move, consider Keene. Keene is famous for its civil disobedience and non-cooperation, and there's plenty of political opportunity as well. From demonstrations and vigils to outreach and volunteering, there's a lot going on in Keene. Keene is the liberty media capital of the world, with television, talk radio, and more, all originating here. Though it's more than just activism, with regular social events each week. See what's happening at freekeene.com and get connected with video, audio, free books, a forum, and activist tools you can download and use in your area at freekeene.com. That's freekeene.com. When I found the Free State Project, I knew it was the key to achieving liberty in my lifetime. It's awesome to be surrounded by like-minded, freedom-loving activists who've moved here to New Hampshire. From politics to civil disobedience, we have it all. Where I came from, it felt that no matter what I did, liberty was dying. Perhaps you feel the same way? Call 888-377-2515 now to learn more about the Free State Project. That's 888-377-2515 or visit freestateproject.org.
Now that you've found the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM, you may want to help expose others to our great programs. To assist you in doing so, you'll find resources at promote.lrn.fm, including details on how to get a free bumper sticker, quarter-page flyers you can print out and distribute, banners for your website, as well as files that will allow you to make your own custom banners and graphics. Visit promote.lrn.fm and help bring new listeners to the Liberty Radio Network. That's promote.lrn.fm.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies! Jesus. On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you got to keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadavi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
This is going to be, you know, a, a playa in Southern California in the district of a gentleman Republican they don't like none too much. So this is gives them an opportunity to kind of go on par. Maybe they can have an input on one congressional, maybe two, maybe ten, maybe more. But it's based around they just want to be equal. You know, have an opportunity to express themselves and educate the public. And, yeah, you should be voting over this way and this and over here and this guy. And I'm like, you're still voting? So this is, you have to understand from my perspective, David, I've done this a long time. It's kind of like, it's like we're ruled by, you know, they, them, those. That the whole political system is just like an insulation to protect the guys that really run things. And you're right, it's probably money. You know, then it's money versus money. And I'm like, got to go to the hearts and minds. And maybe that's what progressivism is trying to accomplish, is get to us inside and that we have some overlap. But the one thing that's interesting, as I, you know, a lot of times I'll talk to the guests, but during the break, you know, you have all these freedom-oriented commercials for different things that we support and different organizations on the network and all this. And I'm going, wow, you know, guns and weed. I mean, you go, wow, they put that in the same movie? So I'm going, you know, so we have fun here. But do you see that there's, like with the Ron Paul Lovolution and all that happened with that and the youth going in there, was there any gleaning for you guys from that? Was the progressive self, they got smaller? Did they make more alliances with the libertarian-oriented youth? I mean, what do you think? Give us your perspective on that.
I really like Ron Paul. Ron Paul was my favorite Republican candidate for president. I didn't vote for him. But, you know, I think that he had a lot. He made a big contribution, and I loved it that he was always the underdog and they barely gave him any respect for so long. And then he showed them how powerful his organization really was, because it was grassroots based.
There was no organization. That was the point.
It was the people, and it was exciting. It's really fun. And I think, yeah, I think that I have to say that his son Rand has carried on that tradition in a big way. And I can't universally endorse Rand, but I do feel as though he's got a lot of the right ideas. I don't think we would necessarily agree on a lot, but, you know, so his prison reform issues are right on, and yeah, other issues, the foreign policy, I can't really go into on behalf of
Monster. Why is foreign policy eliminated from the agenda on Monster? I mean, is that just too much to go up against? It brings in, I mean, why? I mean, can't you be anti-war? Is that not allowed anymore in a progressive area?
No, you definitely can be, and there's a lot of progressives who are anti-war. Here's why. We are specializing in the public health and safety sphere, and we're trying to be specialists to a great extent, because I take it I'll give you an example from my law practice. When I became specialized in a particular area of commercial litigation, a very narrow niche of commercial litigation, and spent a period of years developing that part of my practice, I became much more in demand from clients and much more effective for my clients than I had been as a general practitioner. I don't think that we, especially a newer organization like ours, can be very effective on a broad range of issues. We can be more effective on a narrower range of issues, and we're broadening our issues. We've just added, this week, we added three, I think, to our website last night. So we've been talking about them and thinking about them for a long time, but we did just add them to our website, Monster Pack. By the way, can I give that address?
Please. Yeah, I apologize. I've been saying Monster Pack about as often as I can here, but is there a web page? Go ahead and give it out.
It's that. It's Monster Pack, MONSTAHPAC. That's MONSTAHPAC.com.
Yeah, Monster. You know,
yeah, we also have a really fun Facebook page, which we use to ridicule Daryl Issa to no end. It is, it's facebook.com/MonsterPack, MONSTAHPAC. And we'd love to have you visit that page and chime in on a few of these.
We have in the video archive here, we have the graphics of a lot of your logos and stuff are coming up along with your pictures. So we're promoting you. Okay.
The videos are really enjoyable. One video that we created at the end of the campaign in the last cycle was is Darryl Issa a sociopath? And then we spent 2.5 minutes of...
Well, is he a politician? I'll tell you right there. So, you know, I'm we approach it from culture. That's one thing I think that progressives try and tap into more, at least, is that a cultural understanding, a desire, you know, a acceptable behavior and position of, and kind of that psyop mode. I've been familiar with that effort. And then, of course, on the right, they do the same thing. That's why the slogan on Freedom's Phoenix is uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. You know, I'm just tired of being lied to all the time. You know, and I had... What got me involved in politics in '88 is the Omnibus Trade Competitiveness Act of "We Rule You, Fascist America," from, you know, the Daddy Bush of "Here We Go." And I'm going, wow, this is bad. How did they get away with this? It was election law. So I challenged 44 election laws in federal court, went all the way to the Ninth Circuit. And I'm not an attorney, but I did oral argument before the Ninth Circuit, you know, in the end of '94, right after the '94 election cycle. And it was really simple. And we won a lot of different stuff. And change the stipulated to what, you know, they put a stay on it because we want to change the law and kind of blah, 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 because they got caught. It was all this mechanism to preferential treatment for those in the private club of Republican and Democrat. And if you weren't that, then you didn't get to play on an equal basis. You had to pay 10 cents a name for the computer database of registered voters, where as a county chairman and libertarians, I get it free. But if you're independent, sucks to be you. Twice as many signatures to get in 9.5 days, where they got you. I mean, it's just stupid. And I'm going, the system is broke. So once I understood that, it's politics is just a manifestation of preferences that, you know, I don't even believe are counted correctly. But it's from a culture. It's from people. And the youth getting involved in 07 or Dr. Paul's thing, there was a lot of people from the left, and it was mostly from anti-war. And as we're going into more war, and Obama, oh, I can see why. It's because Obama's supporting the wars.
Yeah, he does support the wars.
Well, I mean, so that's, you're going uphill battle there if you include foreign policy.
Well, that would be an uphill battle for some of us, but that's really not the reason we didn't choose foreign policy. We wanted to promote public health and safety. But
war is not good for public health and safety, as FYI.
I agree with you. I agree with you. I think that it's a worthy topic, and I think people should be counted on that topic. I think progressives and other Democrats should be definitely, they should have to. I want to see Congress have a very full and fair debate on the issue. I want to see if they say no go to war, then the president should stop going to war. And I think that that's the way that Congress should work. And it's been a long time coming.
You know, one of the things is, you know, Larry King did a gave notoriety to a free and equal debates that was separate, you know, included certain third party, certainly. But, you know, they wanted to have, you know, kind of it be a more level playing field in this debate structure in American politics, certainly at presidential level. But they're in California, L.A. now. They moved over. What's that? Christina Tobin, I think it is, that does this. We've had her on. I would think that, you know, this would be, you know, I'm not sure if they go down the congressional race, but certainly. The sentiment for more debate and more inclusion and more talking about real issues and not. I was so proud of myself. Oh, you'll like this, David. This election cycle here in Arizona, I didn't see a single campaign commercial, not one. I just turned off my TV. I got Roku. I'm watching it. I didn't have to start. But my friends and audience are going, oh my goodness, it's all negative now. And that's certainly what you're building up to, is this monster pack, man. You're going to dump on this gentleman, I'm sure.
We're going to, that's one of our strategies. And, you know, we've got some other strategies that we want to try on for size. There's a lot of negativism in politics, but when you have to deal with jerks in Congress, you have to, you know, you have to tell it like it is, or else you won't get your point across, because the gentleman this and the gentleman that just isn't very public to the public either.
Yeah, no, I understand. I'm just wondering who, right, is there a long list of Democrats or good guys, or you need to replace all of them too? I'm just wondering where the good guys are. All I got to do is watch House of Cards with Kevin Spacey and Robin Wright, and I understand. I wish it was only that bad. Have you seen that series on Netflix, House of Cards?
Love it. Yeah, I love it.
Oh, yeah. My goodness. I wish it was only that bad. You know?
Right. I hear you. I agree with you, too.
Well, I mean, here we have David Einstein. It's Monsta, M-O-N-S-T-A-H, Super Pack. Just Google Monsta Pack, and I guarantee it freaking comes up. You know, they're going to be a player in this coming election cycle, 2016.
Excuse me, is this where...
There you go. All right, we'll go ahead and get this, Donna, give me a couple hours. We go through the editing and all that and stuff. And then Donna will send you the link, and you're in the third hour of the show. And we got all kinds of construction in the alley. We're up at the Sunburst Farm, you know, like 51st and Greenway. And it's just, it's so old to communicate. They finally are getting us new lines for everything. And I'm like, yay. But the phones are out today. So I appreciate you making the effort to get, you know, the Skype up, the video we had. Probably, we didn't want to start it without you and have anyway. So you'll get the good audio file though.
Okay, well, thank you, and I want to tell you and Donna that you guys are the best organized radio program that I have talked to in 20 interviews so far in this campaign that Eileen's helping me with. So my hat's off to you, and I really admire the fact that you put on the shows today in light of the challenges you have. Thank you.
Yeah, no. Donna is really good at, you know, because I was producer before too, and communicate and get it taken care of. And I'm sorry we had communication problem. That's not normally, but we got through it. And I'm glad that we know about you, and the fact that you have some history here in Arizona, and you're involved in politics, and we got, you know, the progressive effort of we're going to use some Citizen United money to go kick some ass. You know, I that's of interest. But I'm way past this stuff. I mean. See, the Ron Paul, you remember the Ron Paul Lovolution logo that was all over the place, the revolution, the love in it? You ever see those? I'm the one that created that.
Oh, did you?
You know, okay. So that came out of here in Arizona. So when we did this, Ron Paul had spoken that. We had to do an annual thing called the Freedom Summit. And this year, we're doing it on Pi Day, 3/14/15, you know, that Saturday. And the reason is because we're going to have the Bitcoin Summit, bitcoinsummit.info. This Bitcoin thing is a perfect libertarian, anarchist, voluntarist, leave me alone, you know, concept and technology that is really a threat to, you know, collectivized we rule youism. And I'm going, this is something that it's math. It can't be stopped. And I'm wondering if our age, I'm 53, you know, so I mean, I'm a little bit older, but I was these young guys. I understand the concept of the support for this. And I'm going, okay, how is this going to manifest itself into our culture or even politics? I think politics is so slow, and they're so always fighting the last war that they don't really understand what social change this is going to be. And I would encourage you to look at this new technology and these young people that are coming out into the workforce and seeing since 08 and what happened there, they're just like, oh, hell no, we can do this better. Government itself has just lost all its credibility to be an answer to anything. You know, so you really have to engage these young people in how it's going to be relevant instead of just all this negative stuff all the time and be for something. I mean, if you're going to be for something, what would you say that was?
I'm for a nuclear waste-free coastline. That's number one. I'm for citizens and police respecting each other.
Oh, we didn't get into that. Let's do that now. We're still in the archive. I definitely want to bring this up. Cameras on officers, better than not, okay? But then they got lost, it got turned off, and, you know, because you know why. So what is it that you're advocating? Is this a state or a federal thing, or used in what way?
It would be the states assisted in any way that the federal government should and can assist. The federal government obviously has an interest with the Department of Justice in law enforcement. I believe that the Rialto, Arizona study, you may be familiar with that. It was an exceptional study. It was a randomized controlled study over a 12-month period of time. It was published just a year ago. I mean, 2 years ago, 2013. And in that study, the Rialto study, citizens' complaints against police declined by 88%. And so, in other words, in the small area of Rialto, they went from 24 complaints down to 3. Use of force by police officers dropped by 60%, 61 events down to 25, in other words. And so all in all, the shifts of the police officers experienced twice as many use of force incidents than shifts with the shifts without the body cams experienced twice as many use of force incidents than the shifts with body cams. And officers without body cams were more likely to use force without having been physically threatened. Whereas all use of force incidents involving body cams began with a suspect physically threatening the officer. So, yeah, that transparency did have its benefits. And I understand there's some privacy concerns, and I'm pretty sure you're concerned about that.
Yeah, no, certainly with the officer, you know, in public, doing public business with public money, if I paid the public, I mean, I'm going, no, you don't get any private. Now, for the individual, you know, that's being accosted by them, or you know, broadcasted just because you stopped them, there may be some issues there. But I mean, certainly if you're an interface and I need that, well, of course, it's sold as protection for the officer too, you know, that, you know, get the truth out. But it's getting to the point. See, when you were here in Arizona, I remember after Gulf War One and the veterans started coming back, well, of course, there was just a funnel into this big expansion of police under the Clinton administration. And then they did this multi-jurisdictional task force thing, and then Sheriff Arpaio gets elected in 92, and man, he's just, ooh, we're going to amp it up, okay? And I'm going, it didn't work out well. You pushed out a lot of the constitutional and the, you know, you respect your rights and the officer-friendly Jack McLean type, you know, guys from law enforcement. I mean, we could see it happen as activists. Then you get this fusion center thing and this national, and here we come, we rule you, and it's all together to where we're all just one big happy family. I got a friend of mine is the liaison, a sergeant, you know, from the Phoenix Police Department, the fusion center, and he has a .fbi.gov, you know, at fbi.gov email address. I'm going, what the hell is that? I thought you were a Phoenix police detective or sergeant. He goes, we're just one big happy family. So I'm going, this is not a good trend. And I think, I'm not really sure that would be a progressive or a neocon kind of, what is this collectivization of law enforcement under federal control? Is that something that you are against or for or understand, or it's an issue? What do you think?
Well, yeah, the Constitution reserves the rights to the people to preserve the peace and public safety of the, you know, of our, inside the United States. It's a power reserved to the states, not to the federal government. When there's federal laws that are constitutional and there's some law enforcement aspect, involved, they should be involved in that. But I don't think they should be running the local police departments now.
Yeah, that's what's going on. And, you know, I'm just, cameras would be better than not, probably. You know, so I advocate for that. Well, thanks, David, for coming on. It was an interesting discussion. I'm glad we got to know each other. When you got some big news and you think it'd be something of interest to the list, because this is, it's a good break from a lot of the stuff. It's kind of the same stuff. It's just, you know, people out there wanting to express themselves, which, of course, we're always supportive of. So when you need to express yourself again, you let me know.
All right, Ernest, I will. Okay, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
You bet. Bye-bye, Dave.
Fun. Thanks. It's been fun. Bye.